for the Peter B. Collins Show that's coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The President's State of the Union speech is in 3 hours. It'll be the last one for George W. Bush, and we're joined now live by CBS News White House correspondent Mark Noller.
Harley, the President will offer words of reassurance about the state of the economy. He'll describe it as undergoing a period of uncertainty. He'll acknowledge that at kitchen tables across the country, there's concern about the economic future. But he'll say that in the long run, Americans can be confident about the nation's economic growth.
Well, the economy and the war, of course, with the surge working, Mark, what will the president say?
Well, he'll make the case that important progress has been made in Iraq. He'll say the surge of American troops have achieved results that few of us could have imagined a year ago, and that the U.S. must sustain and build on those gains. Harley.
Political headline of the day, this endorsement.
I feel change in the air.
Senator Ted Kennedy, it can only help Obama. Barack Obama, who's been trailing Hillary Clinton in opinion polls, headed into Super Tuesday. Republicans are headed into Florida Tuesday.
You elect me president, and we will remain on offense, and we will win the terrorist war against us. Win it. Not just watch it, we'll win it.
Political analyst Stuart Rothenberg says Florida is huge for Giuliani and for Mitt Romney.
This is a big state with a diverse electorate. If Mitt Romney can't win here, it's going to raise fundamental questions about the breadth of his appeal.
On the eve of the primary, the opinion polls put Romney and John McCain neck and neck. What about those FEMA trailers, the ones that could have dangerous fumes of formaldehyde? Who is to blame? CBS's Armin Katayan says it goes beyond FEMA.
CBS News has learned that the Centers for Disease Control, now the nation's top public health agency, suppressed repeated warnings from one of its top scientists, raising questions about whether the CDC bowed to pressure from FEMA to conceal, and this is important here, the long-term health risks associated with formaldehyde to some of those 140,000 households that have spent some time in those travel trailers, health risks like cancer and birth defects.
What isn't yet known, of course, is whether any actual maladies can be traced or have been traced to living in those trailers. We'll have more tonight on the CBS Evening News. Looking for a slam-dunk medical career? Take care of the old folks. There's a huge and growing shortage of doctors. By 2030, the way things are going, there will be one geriatric care physician for every 7,665 seniors.
We have a shortage of geriatric nurses, geriatric social workers, pharmacists are undertrained, surgeons, and many other specialties in internal medicine.
Gary Huffam at the Hartford Foundation, which says the silver tsunami is coming and we're not even close to ready. On Wall Street, the Dow gained about 177 points today. NASDAQ picked up nearly 24. Oil prices, $90.99 a barrel, up 28 cents. This is CBS News.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
People today find car insurance difficult to understand. So we invited an expert in mathematics to explain the new e-sign discount from Progressive. Professor?
Well, it's simple. Sign your policy forms at progressive.com and get a $50 discount.
That's it?
Well, yes.
The e-sign discount from Progressive. It's simple. Go to progressive.com, click to sign your policy forms online, and get a $50 discount.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. E-sign discount not available in California, Nevada, and North Carolina. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Chrysler now is offering buyouts.
About a third of Chrysler's Detroit area workers are eligible for retirement. They are being offered a mix of cash and early retirement incentives. Workers with less seniority are being offered cash buyouts of up to $100,000. Unlike Ford and General Motors, Chrysler is targeting its buyouts to specific plants.
That's WWJ's Jeff Gilbert. This just in, by the way, CBS News correspondent emeritus Mike Wallace is reported resting comfortably after heart bypass surgery. Wallace is 89. He was on 60 Minutes from the broadcast's inception in 1968 till he retired as a regular correspondent in 06. Since then, he's been seen occasionally. His last appearance was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, when he talked to Roger Clemens, whose agent today released a point-by-point rebuttal with statistics and charts and comparisons 3 ways from Sunday for why steroids had nothing to do with Clemens' superstar performance. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Reason number 7 to switch to Geico. You never met a body of water you didn't like. If you love personal watercraft, you need to call Geico, because now Geico can help insure all the stuff that moves you, including PWCs. Great rates, great coverage, and personal service 24/7. Call anytime, 1-800-442-9253, or visit geico.com.
Today's most fuel-efficient midsize cars can get about 30 miles per gallon. In a hybrid car, about 50 miles per gallon. But the CSX trains that bring those cars to you, they can move a ton of freight, 423 miles, on a single gallon of fuel. Too bad we can't all drive a train. Go to CSX.com to learn more about our commitment to protecting the environment. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yes, back on the left coast, where I belong. Had a great couple of days in Washington, D.C. Met a lot of fine people. Interesting conversation. Didn't get a T-shirt, but I do have this lousy cold. But there's so much to talk about. So many great people to talk with today. I hope you can stay tuned for the entire 3 hours. We'll kick it off in a moment with journalist Robert Dreyfus. We're going to talk about the situation in Iraq and how it might be complicated by the interests of Iran. Also, later this hour, Professor Jeremy Suri from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, the author of Henry Kissinger and the American Century. We're going to zero in on the continuing role of Dr. Kissinger, and particularly in the Bush administration. We understand that he is consulted as often as weekly. Also on today's program, Cliff Schechter. He blogs, he promotes films, he writes books. We're going to talk about the recent primaries, Florida and South Carolina. And was Mitt Romney wearing some sort of a hearing aid, a listening device, a wireless helper device? Because in the most recent debate, there is a whisper that is heard giving an answer to Mitt Romney that he repeats an eighth of a second later. We're going to talk about that. Also on today's show, Anthony Romero from the American Civil Liberties Union. We're going to talk about the showdown over the FISA extension or reform, whatever you want to call that. Bush is now doubling down, threatening a veto, and apparently will hammer away at that in his State of the Union message tonight. That's all ahead, plus your calls and comments. You're welcome to check in anytime you like at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And the email is on and working, peter@peterbcollins.com. Well, in Washington last week, had a chance to hook up with journalist Robert Dreyfus, and my producer, Katrina Rill, and I had dinner with him on Friday. Hello, Bob. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Always good to be here, long distance this time.
Well, it was fun to visit with you in Washington, and thanks for tooling around with us. I wanted to start off with a piece that is available right now at thenation.com. The only unfortunate part is that somebody inserted an ad for Ann Coulter right over your article entitled Nationalists Stirring in Iraq. I know you had nothing to do with that, and you don't get any of the revenue that comes from it.
No, I probably would have chosen a different ad if I had the, you know, the czar powers that that sometimes people think I have.
Right. Well, a little bit lower down, it's a couple of Barack Obama ads. That's a little more tolerable anyway. So, Bob, one of the pieces here that you've posted indicates that there is a possibility of a kind of a breakthrough among different forces in Iraq. And this is something, of course, that the Iraq Study Group said was supposed to occur as a result of the so-called surge. We're going to give them some breathing space to do this. But it's not actually turning out the way they had expected. Is that right?
Well, it was President Bush, really, who insisted that the surge would create this political space for reconciliation. But, no, it hasn't gotten very far. The Parliament and the Cabinet have done nothing whatsoever, or I should say what they have done is bad. They passed this supposed reform about the Ba'ath Party to rehabilitate some of the lower levels of the party, but that actually turns out to have backfired because it probably is going to lead to a further purge rather than rehabilitation. So the Shia and Sunni are not getting along too well, at least at the level of the political parties that make up the current Iraqi government. But what I've been looking at now for a couple of years is this phenomenon that's growing of independent, kind of actual Iraqi, you know, authentic Iraqi nationalists, both Sunni and Shia Arabs, who are groping towards some sort of accommodation. And repeatedly, as the government of Prime Minister Maliki kind of falters and refuses to open up, you know, for some sort of reconciliation with the Sunnis, this counter-tendency begins to emerge. And I think if the United States would get out of the way, if we wouldn't try to constantly, you know, stick our nose into the machinations of the Iraqi government, we might find that they could come to some agreement on their own, that they could figure out how to organize their own affairs and you know, solve some of the problems. But so far, I think it's more potential energy than kinetic one. They've signed an agreement now of, I think it's 12 or 13 different Iraqi parties. And what unites them is, first of all, of course, they're opposed to the American occupation of Iraq. They're also opposed to Al-Qaeda. And they're opposed, interestingly, to Iran's excessive influence in Iraqi affairs. The one person told me the American political military occupation of Iraq has led to a political occupation of Iraq by Iran. So this nationalist coalition is trying to assert authentic Iraqi interests, and it's as I said earlier, it's kind of groping toward you know, some sort of political program. But so far they haven't gone all the way to declaring an effort to unseat the Iraqi government, to have a no-confidence vote in the parliament. I mean, there are things that they could do that could even, you know, unseat Maliki. Certainly one of the things that's going to unite them is opposition to this proposed U.S.-Iraq long-term military accord that President Bush said he's going to work out.
Yeah,
it's
a status of forces type agreement, and the Democrats are screaming about it because they're afraid that Bush is going to lock in a deal that will go on for years, have a shelf life well beyond even the next president's term.
Well, exactly. Now, President Bush says he's not going to bother submitting this to Congress, that it'll be an executive agreement that he can opt to do on his own. But in Iraq, that's not true. They are going to submit it to their Congress, to the Iraqi Council of Deputies or Parliament. And there, the opposition, the nationalist opposition to it, is extremely intense. So it's by no means assured that they could get this through the Parliament. And certainly, you know, it could take months or even a couple of years before they get around to figuring it out. Now, by the end of this year, by the end of 2008, the authority for the United States to stay in Iraq expires because they're not going to go back to the UN and renew it. So, you know, there's all kinds of political problems that could emerge there. But this coalition is unhappy not only about the U.S. Long-term agreement in Iraq, but about the Kurdish oil deals, the privatization of Iraqi oil. They're unhappy about the role that the contractors are playing, you know, kind of racing up and down Iraqi roads and shooting people at will.
Yeah, that's unpopular. I can understand that. Now, Bob, as you described this new Sunni-Shia alliance, do the Sunnis involved, are they also part of the so-called awakening councils, which, you know, have been receiving cash from the U.S. to run checkpoints and keep people busy? And they've also been receiving a lot of bullets recently and suicide bombers. Over 100 leaders of the so-called awakening councils have been killed since the first of this year. So is it parallel to that or separate in your view?
Well, it is parallel in the sense that, you know, we supported this emerging, these awakening concerned local citizen councils, the military calls them, in five or six different Iraqi provinces. We kind of made a virtue of necessity. These were, for the most part, Sunni resistance groups that were fighting us. We had no ability to quash the insurgency, so we decided to join them rather than lick them. And in so doing, you know, we partnered with these former resistance groups and tribal leaders and others. It has not yet coalesced into a political movement. In other words, these awakening councils are militias, but they don't have any political party attached to them. They don't have any representation in parliament. It hasn't gelled yet on the Sunni side in terms of a true kind of nationalist bloc. It's fragmented into four or five different political parties in the government and then in the opposition and then in these awakening councils. So that all still has to kind of come together, but certainly the politicians in the Sunni branch of the parliament are responding to this new phenomenon. And it's too early yet on the Shia side to say a similar phenomena is happening, but there's a lot of Shia on the majority part of Iraq who aren't too happy with these religious parties as well, which which are the ones, whether it's Muqtada Sadr's party or the Supreme Council party, these other groups, they're you know, loyal to Ayatollahs. They kind of follow the marching orders of the clerics. And many, many Iraqis are both nationalist and secular, and they're not too happy with this continuing dominance of the religious bloc. So really what we're talking about is an emergence both on the Sunni side and on the Shia side of new political formations who could then sit down and negotiate a new constitution, hold elections, and kind of reorganize Iraq from the bottom up. And that's something that, you know, might take a while, but it's something that also the United States is trying to prevent because we're uncertain about, you know, what this new grouping would mean. So that we're still trying to hold on and prop up this Maliki government. And that's where Iran comes in, because Iran, surprisingly, has convergent interests with the United States. The Iranians also are supporting the Maliki government and the religious parties and militias. So we find ourselves almost on Iran's side, at least part of the time, in propping up the Iraqi government. And yet there's, by the same token, there's a kind of a struggle for power between the U.S. and Iran over, you know, who has the most influence there.
Well, this explains why Dick Cheney had to have his heartbeat reset. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Dreyfus and talk more about this relationship, the U.S., Iraq, and Iran, and what the U.S. can do to help those forces in Iraq actually prevail and move forward. We'll take a break and return with journalist Robert Dreyfus. Visit his website at robertdreyfus, DREYFUSS.com. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family,
The Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
You're listening to the greatest talk radio station on the planet, west of the Mississippi, along the Pacific coast, in California, below Davenport, above Lucia, and west of the Gavilan Mountains. KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with journalist Robert Dreyfus. His article posted at thenation.com ends this way. In the end, Iraq is still a shattered nation. Its economy is a shambles. The sectarian civil war has eased, but violence is everywhere. In the past week, two major U.S. military actions, a sweeping offensive just north of Baghdad, and one of the heaviest aerial bombardments of an area south of the capital, have killed scores. The situation around Kirkuk is explosive, and intra-Shiite violence in Basra and other cities in the south simmers just below civil war levels. Even without U.S. interference, it might still take a miracle for a stable Iraqi coalition to take root. And Bob Dreyfus, the John Fogerty music there in the background kind of sets the stage. Americans are tired of it. The war is trailing as an issue in the presidential campaign behind health care reform and the economy. And yet the problems remain, and we can't just wish them away. You write in the paragraph before the one I just read that the Baathist Redemption Act, I don't know what it's really called, I guess Accountability and Justice Act, over there in Iraq, was passed by a half-empty parliament with only 140 of the 275 elected members of the body in attendance. I don't know what their quorum rules are there, but that sounds like it might not even be a legal action.
You know, nobody really takes either the central government of Iraq or the parliament too seriously. So it isn't like they have a Supreme Court and some kind of legal scholars watching everything that happens. It all happens in kind of chaos. And you know, it's a mark of how bad the economy is that it eclipsed Iraq, because Iraq hasn't really gotten that much better. It's just that other things are getting worse, so they're kind of, you know, eclipsing the war as a, as an issue. And it's true the candidates, unfortunately, have stopped talking about it very much. That might change radically in the general election if the Republicans insist on, you know, continuing to defend the war the way their candidates are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Iraq is really kind of perched on a knife edge now. Recently, there have been a whole bunch of signs that the U.S. is looking, you know, kind of toward Iran as a potential partner to stabilize things. And suddenly the military and our ambassador over there and State Department officials are all saying nice things about Iran, how they're helping to damp down the violence, how they've reduced the supply of weapons coming across the border. And the Iranians, too, have started to say nice things about the United States, including, surprisingly, a statement from the supreme leader of Iran, a guy named Ali Khamenei,
right,
a clergyman, who said that, you know, he couldn't rule out the possibility at some point of having reestablished relations with the United States. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's the first time that he's ever said that. And it means that, and I'm hearing from people I'm talking to that there's a lot of Iranian officials in different places in Baghdad and other parts of the world sort of approaching Americans and saying, you know, we're ready to talk. And so the Iranian attitude is pretty simple. It's, we have a lot of cards in Iraq. If you want to stabilize Iraq, come to us. Come deal with us, and we'll help.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Iranians have a price for that. It's four or five different things that they would like out of it. So it's possible that there's a framework for an American-Iranian agreement over
mm-hmm.
Iraq.
Yeah, let me jump into a quick call here. Mohammed in Sacramento, welcome to the program, Mohammed. Just a few seconds here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to ask, is that last agreement between Saud and Iyad Alawi and Sony, does that give you any hint that Saud movement will drop its insistence that Iraq will be a Shia theocracy or agree to be keep Iraq as a secular state?
So he's asking if it'll be a secular state or still a Shia theocracy, Bob.
Well, he's bringing up the question of whether Muqtada Sadr's agreement in this, you know, whether he would go along with it being a secular state, and that's really not determined yet. That's one of the things they really have to hammer out, but I think for all the other partners in that agreement, the central idea is, yeah, we want to have a secular state
mm-hmm.
and not a Shiite theocracy.
All right, we got to run, Bob. Thank you very much. Great to talk to you today.
You too. Thank you.
Robert Dreyfus. Visit his website, robertdreyfus.com. More coming up here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Professor Jeremy Suri, an expert on Kissinger, next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. A couple of chemical engineering professors at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and at the University of California at Berkeley have come up with a way to test the toxicity of chemical compounds without having to use lab rats, mice, dogs, or any other animals. It's a small rectangular glass chip that looks like a standard microscope slide, but with hundreds of tiny white dots that are loaded with human cell cultures and enzymes. It's designed to mimic human reactions to potentially toxic compounds without using any living, breathing creatures to do the test. The story after this.
Homeowners, is your adjustable rate mortgage scheduled to go up? Or even worse, has it started climbing already? Are you paying more than 6.5% on a fixed rate mortgage? If so, you need to act now, because waiting can really cost you. In just minutes on the phone, you can get a free mortgage evaluation from Quicken Loans, America's number one online lender. Quicken Loans is the easiest way to get a home loan. It's fast. You could have a check in as little as 15 days. It's convenient, with less paperwork and a closing right in your home. It's easy. Call now for fixed rates around 5.99%, APR 6.22%. You could save thousands with a rate around 5.99%, and our exclusive process makes saving money easier than ever. Call Quicken Loans for your fixed rate around 5.99% with no prepayment penalty. Call 800-670-3611. That's 800-670-3611. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call 800-670-3611.
In Europe, a ban is looming on animal testing for cosmetics. The ban, pushed by animal rights groups, goes into effect a year from March. And here in the United States, people are increasingly queasy also about using animals, especially inflicting pain on animals for products like new lipstick or eyeshadow. And already many companies have begun using synthetic skin substitutes and computer simulations. But the idea for an in vitro system, literally in glass, that Jonathan Dordick of Rensselaer and Douglas Clark of Berkeley have come up with would be cheaper and more efficient and could conceivably replace most of the lab animals that are being used in product testing. Most, but not all, by any means. So many medical advances, from polio vaccines to heart valves, have been developed using rats, mice, rabbits, dogs, monkeys, and pigs. The Food and Drug Administration still requires animal studies before it will approve clinical trials for any drug. Some researchers say that animal testing is too slow anyway, and it's never quite clear the animal reaction to a given chemical will be the same as human reaction. In the Dordick and Clark method, two slides sandwiched together would hold human bladder, liver, kidney, heart, skin, or lung cell cultures, depending on what the test was for. Dordick and Clark have founded a company which hopes to market their product by next year. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll try to provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your co-host, along with Mark Leonard. We try to look at current issues from a unique angle and invite our listeners to call in and bring their own different perspective on contemporary affairs. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
One, two, three,
It's talk radio you can dance to.
Does she really want him? I can't stand to see me walk out the door.
Unless you're rhythm impaired like me.
Don't try to fight the feeling, cause the thought alone is killing me right now. Thank God for mom and dad for sticking together, cause we don't know how.
This half hour, we're going to talk about the legacy of one Dr. Henry Kissinger, former National Security Advisor and Secretary of State, one of the only people, I think, who ever held those posts simultaneously, counselor to Richard Nixon. And, of course, he operates a consulting firm that he won't reveal the clients of. That's why he had to retire immediately after Bush appointed him as the absolute wrong person to head the 9/11 Commission. Jeremy Suri is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin. He went to Stanford, got a master's at Ohio University. That's in a town called Athens, just up the river from Cincinnati, where I grew up. Then he got a Ph.D. at Yale. And Jeremy Suri, welcome to our program today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You're there in Madison. I went to Northwestern, and we used to go up there to party.
Well, Madison is still a great place to party and a great place to teach and a great place to be a student.
I bet, yeah. Well, Jeremy, I have to confess, I was hoping to receive your book before we talked today, and I got a bunch of books that I wasn't really excited to receive, but I didn't get yours yet.
And I don't understand what happened, because you need to read my book, and we need to talk about it, Peter.
Well, here's the way it'll work. I'm going to get the book, and I'll read it, and then we'll invite you back, and I can do a little bit more well-informed interview.
Fair enough.
Here's where I wanted to start off. Are you familiar with, or maybe you've read, Naomi Klein's new book, The Shock Doctrine?
Yes, I have.
I'm really fascinated by that. I think that it really connects a lot of interesting issues. And Dr. Kissinger is certainly prominent in the early chapters of the book, where she describes the shock economic therapies that were applied to governments in crisis in Central and South America, starting in the 1970s, and how these dovetailed with two very interesting elements. One, the economic shock doctrine promoted by Milton Friedman in the Chicago School of Economics, and the proliferation of torture techniques that were codified in a book called Kubark. It's a manual or a handbook that the CIA compiled after its so-called MKUltra project,
right,
which attempted to, it tested the effects of LSD on unsuspecting people. And in a project that Naomi Klein details at McGill University, they used the isolation techniques that we have seen used at Abu Ghraib and Gitmo and presumably Bagram and elsewhere. And so it's chilling to see all this tied into one not-so-neat little package.
Right. Well, that's the strength and the weakness of that book at the same time, right? I think what Klein's book does is it shows that what's happening in the late 60s and early 1970s through to the present is that there's an extraordinary centralization of power and a use of power for purposes that departs from what we traditionally assume to be the principled and interested uses of American power. And that certainly dovetails with Kissinger's activities. I think the problem with Klein's book is it presumes that this is actually a well-orchestrated plot. And I would argue to you that, in fact, American policy is far more complex than that. And Kissinger's genius is his ability to sort of play the right hand and left hand against one another,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes in tandem when necessary. And you can actually see that as even being even more diabolical than what Klein describes, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get your point, and I think it's fair. So what is the current role of Henry Kissinger in the Bush administration?
Well, it's a very interesting story, Peter. I mean, first of all, he's continued, unlike any other figure from the Nixon era, he's continued to be one of the most influential people, both in American policy and in American business circles. This is not true of people like Jimmy Carter or Zbigniew Brzezinski, but it is true of Henry Kissinger. And so he's continued to have this role. And with the Bush administration, he's actually come to play almost the role of an oracle, guiding the administration in presumptions about the Middle East and guiding it also in presumptions about conducting a war in the Middle East. And this is based upon his experience with Vietnam, based upon his knowledge of the players in the Middle East, and based upon the fact, as I argue in my book, that really the policies we're following today are continuations of the policies he put in motion. And so in that sense, he still remains the master of the framework within which we operate.
Mm-hmm. And is it true that Bush consults with him on a regular basis?
Kissinger is the only person outside of the Bush administration, and in fact there are very few within the administration, who can call the Oval Office when he's in Washington, and if the president is there, he can just go in and meet with the president. He does not need an appointment.
Mm.
As far as I know, there's no one else
mm-hmm.
Who can do that. Maybe the president's father, and it's doubtful if even he can do that.
Yeah. And so what do you see as the current policy influence? Do you think that Kissinger For example, is the guy who helped Bush decide to repudiate Jim Baker and other friends of his father in the Iraq study group and actually increase American deployments there at a time when everyone was advising the opposite.
Yes, I think so. I think it fits a perfect pattern of what Kissinger has consistently written about long before he was in office and what he did when he was in office. His argument has long been that the United States needs to mix diplomacy with force and that we don't do enough of both. And so his argument in supporting the surge, as it's been called by the Bush administration, Kissinger's argument, was that we had to show the insurgents and show Iran and show others that we were willing to use more force, not less, that we were not going to back down, while at the same time getting more involved in intensive negotiations with the various players in the region. And what that amounts to is it amounts to a renunciation of whatever was left of any democracy doctrine. Kissinger argued from the start of the war through to the point we're at right now that the war in the Middle East was never about democracy. And perhaps he was wise about that to the start. But right now what it's done is it's really put us in a situation where we're fighting a war and we don't really know what we're fighting for there except for the sake of fighting to make things look better for ourselves.
Jeremy Suri with us, professor of history, University of Wisconsin-Madison. His latest book, Henry Kissinger and the American Century, published last year by Harvard University Press. If you have a question or comment, you can dial in right now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. One of the other angles here that I think the corporate media in this country has failed to report is the deep connection between Paul Bremer, who was running Iraq during the occupation for the first year and a half or so, and Henry Kissinger. He actually worked at Kissinger and Associates, did he not?
That's absolutely right. Bremer was one of the senior partners there and went from Kissinger Associates to the Bush administration.
There was one stop in between. He formed a company of his own, a consulting firm, intending to cash in on the war in Iraq. And it was shortly after he started that the Bush administration sent Jay Garner to be the first leader of the occupation.
Right. Right.
And he was not a team player, and they sacked him, within about 45 days?
I think that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point.
So what then was Kissinger's influence over Bremer at the time of the occupation and the remarkable decrees that he wrote? Again, coming back to Klein's book about the use of a crisis situation to impose radical free market changes on an economy, as we have done in Iraq.
Yeah, and see, this is where I would differ from Klein, and not in any way to apologize for Bremer. I think if there are two or three people to blame for the war, Bremer is certainly on the top of that list. But I don't think Bremer went in with an organized plan to remake Iraq as a free market economy for us. I think he was far more clueless about what he was doing. I think Kissinger's role was in encouraging the Bush administration to send him because he saw Bremer as a capable person, as a strong person. Kissinger's very big on strong leadership, people who will make tough choices. He thought Bremer was that kind of person. But I think even in Kissinger's eyes, Bremer proved not up to the task. His failures were not failures in producing nefarious ends. His failures were failures in being able to do anything effective, and as a consequence, leaving an environment of chaos there. They didn't build even the rudiments of a free market economy.
Well, they had these kids from the Heritage Foundation who were given incredible responsibilities. And, of course, we know that $8 to $10 billion is just missing.
Absolutely.
Not sure how much of it was American money, how much of it was Iraqi oil money. I don't know, Jeremy. I'm having a little trouble with this.
I would argue they were corrupt, Peter, and they were incompetent. They were conservative ideologues, mm-hmm. many of whom were anti-Kissinger because they believed he'd been too soft on American enemies in the past.
Uh-huh.
But they proved incompetent. I mean, they weren't able even to do what they intended to do. They failed to build any kind of functioning economy. You don't have a functioning free market economy there. You have mm-hmm. A wasteland of economic activity controlled by warlords in different regions. In a way, I wish they were a little more competent. That would be a little better than what we've got now.
Well, I guess for me, this pattern of incompetence is hard to accept, particularly in, and I understand your differences with Klein, But I think her arguments are very strong, that, you know, this kind of chaos was permitted to occur because it creates the opportunity for radical change that can be forced on people at a time when, you know, they're really overwhelmed and unable to resist or even acknowledge what's going on.
Right, and perhaps there are, Peter, people who think in those terms, and I don't know enough about all the people in the Bush administration, so I should grant that. But I will say that that's not Kissinger's point of view. I mean, Kissinger is a man of order. He's a believer that the role of the United States should be to go in and find status quo figures that we can work with. His entire Middle East policy from the early 70s, which is a policy we still operate with, is to find strong men, caudillo figures, who we can work with as our dictators, our boys in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a status quo policy. That's not a radical policy. That's not a policy of revolutionizing the area. And Kissinger is actually noticeably ignorant of basic economics in many areas. So, I mean, I think the classic Kissinger policy is the policy towards the Shah of Iran, which was about, you know, allowing the Shah to buy any weapons he wanted to buy from the United States as long as he paid in cash, and using the Shah as a proxy for our interests in the region.
Right.
And what happened in Iran is to some extent what we're seeing happen in Iraq today. That's the ultimate failure. And one of the points I try to make in my book is that we have to work our way out of this framework. We can't assume that we can find Musharrafs and Shahs out there who will, in the long run, support our interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a worldwide shortage of good dictators, isn't there?
Yeah, well, and the problem is the good dictators become our worst enemies with our support. I mean, Musharraf gets $10 billion of our money, and all it's doing is making, to my mind, the situation worse for us in the region.
I think you're right there. Dave joins us from Eureka. Welcome, Dave. You're on with Professor Jeremy Suri.
Well, Peter and Professor Jeremy, I think as most of us look at this occupation and invasions, there is nothing at all legitimate about it. It's based completely on lies. It is, however, very, very profitable to a few small, giant corporate special interests, the Lockheed Martins and Halliburtons and such. And if Kucinich doesn't see what we're seeing, if these Republican candidates for president don't see it, I have to wonder, why not? I think they're a part of it, the knowing part of it. That's my guess.
All right. Professor, your reaction?
Oh, I tend to agree with Dave. I think that there is a problem with illegitimacy that's plagued this process and plagued this project, if you want to call it that, from the start. And there's no doubt that a number of corporations, both legally and illegally, are benefiting from this. Why don't people see that? Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, we take corporate dominance of our daily lives for granted. We don't see it when it's happening in front of us. And second, I think the other problem is that we haven't had leaders who have actually identified this and talked about it enough. I'm looking for the Democratic candidates to make more of this. My disappointment with Hillary Clinton is that she seems to be unwilling to make that case. But I think Dave is right, and I think Halliburton and other entities that have profited from this at the cost of American lives and treasure, now at the cost of our economic sustenance, they need to be called out on this.
But if you do that, you'll be labeled angry like John Edwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a time for anger. That's why I write. I think I write best when I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
I think some politicians are best when they're angry. My sense, at least of students, and maybe students at Madison and other universities where I lecture are not represented, but my sense is that students want to hear more of this.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Suri is with us, University of Wisconsin at Madison, author of the book published in 07, Henry Kissinger and the American Century. We'll pick up after a break here. You can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Grab the podcast. Links on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540.
This is an important message from Brian McGuff, Iraq War veteran and Purple Heart recipient.
More and more troops and veterans of Iraq believe George Bush's military policy has been a disaster. I am one of them. Rush Limbaugh called vets like me phony soldiers for telling the truth about Iraq.
The Rush Limbaugh Show, September 26th.
Welcome to the EIB Network. Hello.
Hi, Rush. Thanks for taking my call. They never talk to real soldiers. They like to pull these soldiers to come up out of the blue and stop the media.
The phony soldiers.
The phony soldiers.
Rush, the shrapnel I took to my head was real.
my traumatic brain injury was real. My belief that we are on the wrong course in Iraq is real. And so you have the guts to call me a phony soldier to my face, stop telling lies about my service.
Tell Rush Limbaugh to stop insulting America's troops and veterans. Call 800-282-2882. Paid for by Vote Vets Action Fund.
We're going.
Tom Hartman.
We have an economy in the United States right now that is being held together by spit and glue and rubber bands.
It's a Tom Hartman program.
And basically the glue and the rubber bands, the spit arguably is just hype that everything's going to be okay. And the glue and the rubber bands are debt, we have a debt-based economy, and war, the manufacturing of weapons of mass destruction, weapons of death.
Tom Hartman, live every morning 9 to noon on KRXA 540.
Hello, everybody. This is R.J. Moyer. Join me Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for Sports Phone KRXA. Now all of us Monday morning quarterbacks can get together Sunday nights and talk about football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, hockey, softball, volleyball, kickball, bocce ball, bowling, rugby, lacrosse. Well, maybe we won't talk about rugby and lacrosse, but join me anyway for Sports Phone KRXA, Sunday nights from 6 p.m. until 7 p.m.
I love coffee, I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia is the place for me. Coffee and tea, the honey and me, at Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries, or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. This portion is brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. You love organic fruits and vegetables, so pick up some organic wine. Log on to ecowine.com or call Veronique right now at 888-ECO-WINE. That's 1-888-ECOWINE.
There were drums in the air as she started to dance.
We continue our conversation with Jeremy Suri, professor of history, University of Wisconsin-Madison. The book we're talking about, Henry Kissinger and the American Century. And we are joined by Roger in Capay Valley. Hello, Roger. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter and Professor. Hey, I was wondering if you could reflect on this idea that by working with the warlords now, those guys are normally not political in any society, but they provide the natural leadership that kind of creates a protective envelope for a society. A lot of times societies, when they're conquered, people try to suppress them. In Iran, Ahmadinejad and those folks, they're part of that natural leadership. You know, they grew up, I'm going to say, from the streets and the universities, and they were natural martial coalitions. And so the difference between, say, Kissinger, who's looking at the larger picture, you mentioned that he's not familiar with, you know, basic economics in a way. So he's not really thinking down at that ground level of the natural leadership. He's thinking more in terms of the great leader phenomenon where, you know, you look for the Shah, or you look for a Musharraf, for somebody who can control the society. But the reality, like if you look at Musharraf, when he emphasized that they can think, you know, he's a collegial general.
Right.
Those are academic boys.
Right.
And our army is, you know, at least the army we had in Vietnam, you know, the officers were academic. I mean, you'd be amazed. In my infantry class, we had 85% college graduates, mostly engineers and scientists and mathematicians.
All right, let's get a comment. Jeremy, go ahead.
Okay, no, I think it's a great point. First of all, maybe warlords get a bad name in some sense.
Yeah, they get a bad name.
One person's warlord is another person's effective party boss in the local area. You know, perhaps Giuliani was the warlord of New York City in some respect.
So, I'm thinking a little bit differently. I'm not thinking that they're politicized. I'm thinking it's the natural martial character.
Yeah.
Natural leadership that you draw your academic officers from.
Mm-hmm.
Are a little bit like, I want to say, geniuses or people who have arts. They're kind of uniformly distributed, randomly in the society, across the classes, across the races.
Right.
So they're almost always there. And that's
right.
What I'm thinking is that the street guys, the guys in the Awakening Councils, not the guys who are political, those are more of a mask that glue
right.
or the cohesive force of the society.
Right. I think this is a very good point, Roger.
All right, Roger. Hold on, Roger.
Well, thank you, guys.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very good point. I mean, I think if I could just rephrase it slightly, I think the point would be that in a society that's, for whatever reason, going through a massive transformation out of dictatorial, repressive rule, that you need a combination of local martial figures who can control things at the local level and get things accomplished, and then also those who can map out a future. And if you have too many,
yeah,
one or the other.
Coordination.
Yep.
The city governments, I think, of England jumped the channels, I think, around 1000 AD, sometime in that period. And what they did is they organized the relationship between the English villages, maybe like 30 families, if I recall. And you develop a sense of transport, controlling transport, protecting
yep.
it between, for trade, organizing, you know, large production activities from small modules.
Right, but the problem with the problem with this is that two things. I mean, one, American interests in the context of Iraq or elsewhere are in trying to maintain some larger entity that we can work with. It's far too complicated from our perspective to have to work with these different individualized entities. And that's one problem. How do you bring this together into a coherent whole? I think Iraq might be going just the very way Roger's describing it, but that would be a big problem if one is thinking about long-term oil access and stability in the region. That's one problem. Second issue is, how do you build consistency into that? I mean, warlords have a historically very short lifespan.
That's right.
And that's a problem at all kinds of levels. If you're interested in stability, good stability of one kind or another, we might disagree on what that means, but stability of some kind, it's very hard to hinge that on warlords. I think that's a problem we're having in Afghanistan now. We did a decent job for a few weeks of actually working with the warlords there, but that didn't provide any consistent basis for cooperation. We didn't put enough effort in after that. But these warlord figures, they're inconsistent in their own interests.
Right. Their interests are basically who paid them most recently.
Well, exactly.
Patricia in Sacramento, listening on 1240 Talk City. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter B., and thank you to your guest. I want to make a quick comment, and then I have a question. Do you think, well, let's start with a question. Do you believe that we are playing a very dangerous game as far as foreign policy? And I want to give two quick examples. One would be in the Los Angeles Times about a year or 2 years ago, there was an article about how, it was by Silverstein as the journalist,
mm-hmm.
how the Bush administration was forging a relationship with the Sudanese government in order to find terrorists, and which I found completely astounding. This is where Darfur occurred.
Right.
Where 250,000 people were massacred, you know,
right.
women, children, just about anybody who was innocent. And we know Bin Laden lived in Sudan for a
right.
long time, and he helped build a lot of the roads in their capital. And then the other question deals with Pakistan, like you were just mentioning earlier, is that we know Musharraf is not clean. We know there's a very strong possibility that Bhutto's assassination, he had some hand involvement in that.
Agreed.
Because it was, you know, he tried to cover it up. The
mm-hmm.
crime scene was cleaned off immediately. The way the whole thing was described. Also, his ties with the extremists in Pakistan. So he kind of plays the card on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get a response, Jeremy.
You know,
I'm playing
a dangerous game here, and I'll take my question off the air.
Gotcha. About 30 seconds, Professor.
Yeah, no, I think Patricia's right. We are playing a dangerous game here. We're playing a dangerous game, one, because we're hinging ourselves to leaders who are fomenting or inspiring terrible opposition to themselves, which will then blow back upon us, and we're also playing a terrible game, or a dangerous game, because we're supporting the increase in violence in the region. The problem is, or the point I try to make in my book, is that this is nothing new. Bush might have actually done more of it, but it goes back to Kissinger himself. He's locked us into this policy, and if nothing else, my book is about trying to convince people to think beyond this. We need to think beyond cozying up to military dictators who look in the short run like they'll serve our interests.
Henry Kissinger in the American Century. We've been talking with author and professor Jeremy Suri, S-U-R-I. Thank you.
Thank you,
We're
Peter.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The President's final report on the State of the Union.
We'll hear words of reassurance about the state of the economy and the situation in Iraq.
Ted Kennedy endorses Barack Obama.
I feel change in the air.
I'm Howard Arenstein in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Now, in the final year of his presidency, George W. Bush is starting to do things for the last time. This evening, he delivers his last State of the Union address. We get a live preview from CBS News correspondent Mark Noller.
He's a lame duck in an election year, and he knows it. So President Bush will announce no big-ticket programs. But he will call on Congress to quickly pass the economic stimulus plan agreed to last week. He'll describe the economy as undergoing a period of uncertainty, and he'll say that in the long run, Americans can be confident about economic growth. He'll also offer a hopeful message about the situation in Iraq. He'll say the surge in U.S. troops last year has achieved results few could have imagined. He'll call on Congress to continue funding the effort, saying the U.S. objective is to sustain and build on the gains made last year. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller, CBS News.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. The speech comes as President Bush's popularity rating is at an historic low, and his influence with Congress is at an equally low ebb. Democrats know they'll hear the president say the war in Iraq is going well, and note he said that in every State of the Union speech since the war began. Congress will move quickly on an economic stimulus package and wants to move well past the president on global warming. But none of the president's major initiatives, Social Security, permanent tax cuts, or immigration, have gotten anywhere, and the speech is unlikely to change that.
The speech begins in 2 hours. Now this.
You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E.
The omega-3 fatty acids, zinc, flaxseed oil, digestive enzyme. As soon as Donovan was put into his daily food, you could tell he felt better. Okay, did you get that?
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
I'm a midnight milk drinker. I have to be when my heartburn hits. When it does, I just grab a carton and chug it.
Heartburn isn't funny. That's why Zantac is serious. Just one pill relieves your toughest heartburn all day or all night. So the suffering stops and life starts. Heartburn? Attack it. Zantac. Use as directed.
Barack Obama supporters had plenty to cheer about today when Senator Ted Kennedy, the patriarch of a Democratic dynasty, endorsed their man.
Kennedy seemed to criticize President Clinton when he said Obama opposed the Iraq war from the start.
Let no one deny that truth.
He sent a clear signal to Democrats.
With Barack Obama, we will turn the page on the old politics of misrepresentation and distortion.
Obama is hoping the message appeals to voters.
Tired of a politics that divides us and want to recapture the sense of common purpose that we had when John Kennedy was president.
He still appears behind in key Super Tuesday states. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
Hillary! Hillary!
Hillary Clinton kept smiling and campaigning. This was a rally in Hartford, Connecticut. She has endorsements from other members of the Kennedy family. The Florida primary is tomorrow. Polls show Rudy Giuliani trailing John McCain and Mitt Romney, but he promises a surprise.
We've got the vote. We're going to win. We're going to win Florida.
A loss there could end his campaign. More than 41,000 families still live in FEMA trailers that expose them to dangerous levels of formaldehyde. CBS News has reported before on FEMA's failure to address the health risks, and now it gets Chief Investigative Correspondent Armin Katayan.
CBS News has learned that the Centers for Disease Control, now the nation's top public health agency, suppressed repeated warnings from one of its top scientists, raising questions about whether the CDC bowed to pressure from FEMA to conceal, and this is important here, the long-term health risks associated with formaldehyde to some of those 140,000 households that have spent some time in those travel trailers, health risks like cancer and birth defects.
There's been no response from the CDC. Mike Wallace is recovering from heart bypass surgery. He's 89, one of the original CBS News correspondents on 60 Minutes. Wallace went into semi-retirement 2 years ago, but still makes occasional appearances on the broadcast. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
People today find car insurance difficult to understand, so we invited an expert in mathematics to explain the new e-sign discount from Progressive. Professor?
Well, it's simple. Sign your policy forms at progressive.com and get a $50 discount.
That's it?
Well, yes.
The e-sign discount from Progressive. It's simple. Go to progressive.com, click to sign your policy forms online, and get a $50 discount.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. E-sign discount not available in California, Nevada, North Carolina. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us on the Peter B. Collins Show. Spent a few days in Washington, D.C. last week. Good to be back here on the left coast. State of the Union message tonight, 6 o'clock Pacific time. And one of the things the president is alleged to threaten is a veto over a FISA bill that doesn't include immunity for the phone companies. We're going to talk about that in some detail coming up in half an hour with Anthony Romero, executive director of the dreaded ACLU. Returning to our program right now, he's a blogger, he's an author, he's a dad, he's a political activist, and he's stuck in Columbus, Ohio. Cliff Schechter returns. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, how are you doing, Peter?
I'm all right today, and you?
I'm doing well, doing well.
Cliff,
enjoying being stuck in Columbus.
Cliff, it is time for us to start a draft movement to get your manuscript off the shelf.
I don't think we're going to have to do that, because to be quite honest with you, I can tell you and anybody out there who cares and is listening that assuming that he comes through on Super Tuesday, which I suppose for me, you know, in the selling books would be good. It wouldn't be so good, I think, for the rest of us, because I think I'd rather have one of the other munchkins up there.
But let me explain what I'm referring to. Cliff wrote a book called The Real McCain. He had a website up at therealmccain.com. And a few months back, you and your publisher reached agreement that probably John McCain wasn't going to be the candidate this year, and therefore you kind of put the book on the shelf.
Yeah, it was over the summer, actually. I wrote it last winter and spring, and we decided in the summer that we better put a hold on it because he was doing so horribly, and so we figured that that was the best course of action. But obviously, in the Republican field that they had there, I mean, the collection of stooges who can just find a way to outdo the others in how pathetic they are, they've dropped like flies. And the last one standing is a guy that a lot of the establishment hates but may just have to embrace. So,
mm-hmm.
We may just have to release my book and my findings to the world.
Yeah.
All about the good Mr. McCain.
Well, I think it could become very important because, as you know, I don't have to tell you, but I'll say this for the benefit of our listeners, John McCain is not really a maverick. He is a hard-right conservative, and many people kind of gloss him up with an idea that he's a moderate Republican. And there isn't too much that's moderate about him. He's more moderate than, Tom Tancredo on immigration policy.
Yeah, well, I mean, not only is he not a moderate, the other key aspects of his persona are simply not true. I spoke to a lot of people. I talked to reporters. I talked to conservatives. I talked to liberals. I went to his home state of Arizona for about 10 days and went all around speaking to people. And really what it comes down to is what he tries to sell himself as, which are namely a straight talker and a bipartisan kind of guy that gets along with everybody. Neither of those things could be further from the truth. The straight talker persona he brought on in 2000 because it was a good marketing gimmick, and he's mm-hmm. kind of used it since then.
Right.
But if we talked about Bush's tax cuts, if we talked about at least his rhetoric on abortion, if we talked about his positions on evolution and teaching on creationism, and I can really go on down the list. I mean, even his biggest issue on foreign policy, he was the guy who was up front calling for us to pull out of Beirut in 83, calling for us to pull out of Haiti, and in the 90s not to go into Bosnia, used very, very strong language about how it would be a waste of lives and stability didn't matter, or the only thing that mattered were American lives. And, of course, now he's on exactly the opposite side on that. So that's not true. And I can tell you I won't be able to fit all the accounts of times that he personally, verbally assaulted people, mm-hmm. insulted people, fought with people. He's hated by a lot of folks because of that. So this whole nice, bipartisan, likable guy image and straight talker, they're just not true.
The only thing that currently makes him appealing is that Rush Limbaugh is apoplectic at the possibility that he'll be the Republican nominee.
Yeah, well, that's what, in some ways, why I think a lot of liberals embraced him, because they're like, wow, Rick Santorum hates him, Tom DeLay hates him, Rush Limbaugh hates him. He kind of makes some sense. I think anybody those guys hate, we assume immediately has to, at the very least, have a three-digit IQ. So, but when you look more into his record, he's really been, as you said, very, very conservative on a number of things. He's flip-flopped during very important times on important legislation and important social issues for this country, as well as foreign policy. His temperament is something that people should worry about,
yeah.
Frankly.
Cliff Schechter with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can join the conversation if you have a comment. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can read Cliff's ravings at Cliff Schechter, Schechter, .bravenewfilms.org. That's cliffschechter.bravenewfilms.org. Now, one more bite on McCain. One of the things that stuns me, Cliff, is that he gets away with claiming paternity of the so-called surge. And in truth, John McCain did call for a substantial increase in U.S. troop levels in Iraq. But it wasn't a paltry, 25 or 35,000, which is about where it ended up. He demanded at least 100,000 more troops, and that was, as I recall, in the spring of 2007. And he now claims that his advice was taken, that the surge is working, and that it's, Hillary who wants to fly that white flag of surrender.
Yes, the one that, again, he apparently views himself as having flown during most of our other engagements in the past 20 years that he opposed, and in very strong language on the floor of the Senate called for us to pull out. Additionally, you are 100% correct. He, at the time, was calling for at least 100,000 troops, heavily criticizing when it was you know, convenient for him, criticizing Rumsfeld and others and saying it was their fault they hadn't put enough troops in, the surge was going to fail because of that, you know, and other, you know, I mean, we know that obviously this is the same kind of straight talk as the market in Baghdad was safe when he had, had about a whole army garrison behind him, yeah, and maybe Rambo in addition to that.
Right.
So, in fact, Rambo endorsed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not true. He didn't father this surge at all. And, you know, if he did, he wants to pretend that thing's working when there's no political settlement there. And we don't know whose side we're on any given day, whether it's Sunni or Shia.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we can stay there forever. And if it's acceptable to people that there keeps being a drip, drip, drip of Americans dying for no resolution, then I guess you can call the surge a success.
All right. Now, Cliff, let's go after Mitt Romney here, and I have two clips up from YouTube. One is the Martin Luther King honoring with Who Let the Dogs Out, and the bling question, and the other is the whisper during the Florida debate. Which one would you like to do first? You get to choose the news here.
Ooh, I like that. Why don't we go with the Who Let the Dogs Out? It's so much fun.
Okay, this was 1 week ago on Martin Luther King Day, campaigning in South Carolina. And Mitt Romney was getting in touch with his inner blackness. So he's having a photo taken with a group of African Americans.
Who's got your camera, though? Who let the dogs out? Who?
So he's saying, who let the dogs out? Who? And he thinks that's really funny. And then later on, he approaches a group of African-American women, opens with, what's up, and then starts to talk to them about their bling.
Oh, my Lord. What to say about him?
He wants to be the second black president who's actually hunky, I guess.
Yeah, remember, he's had at least one black friend his whole life, so he does understand. I have nothing I could say to add to that, almost, except for the fact that he's obviously one of the whitest people on earth. And it seems like every single thing, ironically enough, the Republicans said about John Kerry in 2004, you know, actually describes Mitt Romney,
mm-hmm,
the flip-flopping Massachusetts preppy blue blood. You know, I mean, that's his idea.
Yeah.
You know, maybe start breakdancing soon, too, and I'm sure he thinks that that's what goes on in African-American communities right now.
I want to give credit because it's a podcast listener in Ann Arbor, Michigan, who tipped me off about this clip. And I went to YouTube, and I was there for 40 minutes, Cliff, because there is so much funny video up there about Mitt Romney. And get this, yesterday, I was reading the paper, and I had C-SPAN on, and they had a bizarre kind of clip of a campaign meeting with Tag Romney, one of the sons of Mitt. And, you know, he was talking a little strategy, talking this and that. And then he took a phone call, and he was telling somebody on the other end of the line that they should go to YouTube. And even, you know, YOUTUBE.com. And I just thought, wow, they ought to check what's up there before they start referring their supporters to it.
That's some bad advance work right there.
Now, here is the other clip, and we got to set this up properly. I did not get to watch the Florida Republican debate on MSNBC. Tim Russert was the moderator.
And I'm sure you're still suffering for it.
I feel a little something, withdrawal.
A little blue inside.
Yeah. But this reprises something that George Bush was accused of, which is wearing some sort of high-tech device so that a handler could prompt him when his mind went blank during a debate. And what you're about to hear is, I believe, unedited. It's from YouTube, so you can't always be 100% sure. But it's clear that somebody prompted Mitt Romney with the answer that he gave about a nanosecond later. Listen carefully.
Governor Romney, you are a big fan of Ronald Reagan. Will you do for Social Security what Ronald Reagan did in 1983?
I'm not going to raise taxes. What I'm going to do...
Well, Ronald Reagan...
So somebody somebody edited the piece there so you could hear it repeated. But clearly there was a whisper somewhere on the stage, and you can hear the two words, raise taxes.
Yeah, I think they say he raised taxes, so Romney would know to say, you know, when they ask, are you going to do what Reagan did? Because, you know, mm-hmm, Reagan did raise taxes on Social Security.
Right.
You know, then the payroll tax, then Romney would actually have a clue how to answer that question and say that, of course, he wouldn't raise taxes, you
mm-hmm
know, because... the instinct would be, because Republicans are so used to deifying Reagan as a guy that never raised taxes, which is actually really not true. In fact, the furthest thing from the truth.
You're right.
He closed all sorts of corporate loopholes. He raised taxes on Social Security. You know, I mean, he rolled back some of his earliest taxes later on. I mean, there's a whole lot that's not told by Republicans on that. So Romney can't just say, I'm going to do exactly what Reagan would do, which would be all of their instinct to do, because, you know, if Ronald Reagan was in porn movies, they would immediately say porno was the best thing that had ever been invented.
And we'll talk more about this, and then we'll trash Rudy Giuliani, too. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Cliff Schechter. You can join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super green nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel, Staff of Life in Santa Cruz, and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz and Capitola. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
I'm Erica Martin. Let's take a look at KRXA traffic. Problems in Big Sur, an injury accident along Highway 1 southbound side, just south of Rocky Point Restaurant, an SUV down a cliff. This may be an accident with the worst possible outcome, so expect that traffic tie-up to last a little while longer. Meanwhile, problems in Morgan Hill, some slow traffic thanks to an earlier crash, northbound 101 at San Martin Avenue, and a vehicle in a field. In fact, it's a semi in Salinas, Espinosa Road at Highway 101, and folks are slowing just to take a look. Don't let dry, itchy skin keep you awake at night. Get fast, soothing relief with Gold Bond Medicated Lotion. It's the moisturizing fix that medicates. Gold Bond Medicated Lotion for fast relief. Checking your forecast, rain this morning, clearing this afternoon. Current temperatures around the Monterey Bay, 44 degrees for Salinas, 44 degrees for Santa Cruz, and 48 degrees right here in Monterey. Stay tuned for the KRXA Morning Show with none other than Hal Ginsberg.
Did you ever have to make up your mind to pick up on one and leave the other behind? It's not often easy, not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind?
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. 24 minutes into the hour. I have made up my mind. I'll be voting for Barack Obama next Tuesday in the California presidential primary. And I have struggled with it over the past few months. It's been made easier by the withdrawal of Dennis Kucinich and by the poor showings of John Edwards in the early primaries. We continue now with Cliff Schechter. You can read his blog at cliffschechter.bravenewfilms.org. Let's spell Schechter again one more time for you. S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. And Cliff, do you care to say if you've made up your mind?
I haven't 100%, but I will say that I'm torn. I'm favoring Edwards, but like yourself, I'm wondering if he's not going to be able to do it. And I have till a month later here in Ohio.
Right.
So it would either be Edwards, or if it's not him, it'll end up being Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
really just because the people that surround Hillary Clinton, the corporate crowd, just concerns me too much.
Yeah.
That's my view. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm basically backing into it from a stop Hillary motivation. That's pure and simple what I'm up to.
Cliff, yeah, I think I'm coming from the stop Hillary's advisors motivation there. They
mm-hmm.
just, I wish she didn't surround herself with some of the people she did. They just concern me too much. And, you know, when your chief advisor is somebody who has been in a company that busts unions and
yeah.
advises Blackwater, that's just a little hard for me to stomach that mm-hmm. you're going to fight for working people.
Well, and what are we going to do with Bill? I mean, there have been some great columns recently about Billary, the partnership between the two. And putting aside the jokes, I guess it was Romney saying that he wants to run against Hillary so he can ask people what Bill will do in the White House with no portfolio. But I'm more concerned about how they actually would carve up power and how much influence he would have. And that hasn't been defined. And I think she really owes us that deep explanation.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's an unprecedented situation, obviously. And he's proven by what he's done recently that he's really very willing to get involved in the campaigning aspect. You know, he's been more involved than I think even many of us expected, even knowing how much he does these things. So isn't it safe to also think that he'd be very involved in the governing aspect of things?
Yeah.
And just, you know, and I don't think, I'm not trying, it's not a sexist statement. It's not about it's that it will be a woman president. It's about it's somebody whose spouse already was president.
Right.
Obviously loved the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think it's a very, very realistic question to ask.
Now, you and Robert Greenwald over Brave New Films put together some materials about Rudy Giuliani, pointing out his failures related to 9/11, even though he claims that as his major calling card. The New York Times finally picked up on it last week and published a pretty lengthy story about the sighting of the emergency command post there in Building 7 at the World Trade Center. And that's a controversy that you and I have known about for some time. Now, Rudiani.
Well, that's about right.
Yeah, he's dead in the water, isn't he? He's kind of pulling a Fred Thompson on us.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. I'm reading that even his staff kind of sees the writing on the wall. And you're right about the New York Times. It's not to say that, to give credit where credit's due, Wayne Barrett had picked up on it at the Village Voice even before we at Brave New Films put our film together, so I want to give him a lot of credit. And so there were some other reporters out there who were willing to step up and say it. But some of the major mainstream publications, you're 100% right, the New York Times, they had not covered it.
Yeah.
And it's such an important story because when you know exactly that what he did that day, he set himself up to be running around the
mm-hmm.
way he was because of where he put the command center and other
yeah.
things we've discussed before. But, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, time is tight. Let me jump to Duncan in Healdsburg. Go, Duncan.
Hi, Peter B. and Mr. Schechter. I really look forward to seeing your blog. My question is about McCain, and I watch him in the debate. I watched him in the last debate, and this deadpan, I am right, don't confuse me with facts. And I'd like to get your take. Does McCain
All right.
know something we don't know?
15 seconds. Go ahead, Cliff.
Okay.
No. John McCain, that's what I'm talking about when it comes to this whole bipartisan myth. John McCain is willing to be bipartisan when it's an issue he believes in, and you know, it's not something where he knows he's right and everybody else is wrong.
Yeah, Cliff
when he
Schechter,
knows he's right, he's not going to give in.
Cliff Schechter, thank you very much. Coming up next, the head of the ACLU, Anthony Romero, will join us. We'll talk about the Senate's action on the FISA bill.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
One last time. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Tonight's State of the Union address will come after 4 years, 10 months, and 10 days in Iraq, and 1 year after the President told Congress that instead of drawing down troops, he'd be sending more.
I've spoken with many of you in person. I respect you and the arguments you've made. And whatever you voted for, you did not vote for failure. Our country is pursuing a new strategy in Iraq, and I ask you to give it a chance to work.
And by most accounts, the surge has worked. Violence is down, at least by Iraqi standards. More tribal leaders are on our side than last year, and the catastrophe we've been warned about so many times hasn't happened.
If American forces step back before Baghdad is secure, the Iraqi government would be overrun by extremists on all sides.
But is anybody really worrying about that anymore? Except for talk show hosts, does anybody deliberately start a conversation about Iraq anymore? The spotlight has moved away. It's moved to Pakistan. It's moved to the economy. Facing less money in the retirement account turns out to be scarier even than chaos in Iraq.
Out of chaos in Iraq would emerge an emboldened enemy with new safe havens, new recruits, new resources, and an even greater determination to harm America.
Now, Mr. President, we're just wondering when that stimulus check is coming. In fact, I think you could even mention you-know-what tonight.
To allow this to happen would be to ignore the lessons of September the 11th and invite tragedy.
And even that wouldn't work. Just ask Rudy Giuliani. Now this.
Reason number 9 to switch to GEICO. There's nothing sweeter than saving money on car insurance. It's one of those rare opportunities in life where you can thumb your nose at the system and say, okay, system, listen up. I just got a better deal with GEICO. Great savings, personal service 24/7, and the latest in online technology. Of course, the system may sulk for a day or two, but you're going to feel a lot better.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Momentary victory in the United States Senate today for those of us concerned about our privacy rights under the Constitution and illegal government surveillance. Joining me now is the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, Anthony Romero. Anthony, thanks for joining us today here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is a very important set of issues, and it has troubled me greatly over the last few months, starting with August when the Democrats caved and passed the so-called Protect America Act, which included protection for lawbreaking that has already occurred, protection for the phone companies, and protection for the administration officials, right up to and including Cheney and Bush, who authorized it. And I don't support amnesty for those illegal activities. And fundamentally, if Jay Rockefeller's bill were to be enacted, we would have a situation here where most of the lawsuits attempting to uncover the extent of this surveillance would be thrown out of court, if not all of them.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why the stakes are so high, in fact, is that what's at stake here is whether or not we can hold the government and their accomplices in the telecommunications firms accountable for the breaking of the law, the willful breaking of the law. And that's why today I was glad that you introduced the segment by saying it was a momentary victory, because we can't rest on laurels.
No.
We really have seen already what this Senate and what the House will do when they're faced by the fear-mongering of the Bush administration.
Well, there's going to be a showdown tonight. The president is going to, you know, get out his Texas kind of leverage, and he is planning to use the State of the Union message to vilify Democrats for the action today and for not giving him the surveillance bill that he wants, complete with amnesty for the phone companies.
Right, right. And I think what the Democrats need to do is make sure that they understand that the American people is firmly behind them in making sure that they can put a stop to the unaccountability and the impunity of the Bush administration. We've done a series of polling, focus group research, that shows that the vast majority of Americans think that the Bush administration has gone too far, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And right now we have to make sure we remind them to find their spine again and make sure they don't blink when the president uses the fear-mongering in the State of the Union address, which we fully expect.
Yeah, he's probably going to say that, plots were intercepted, that terrorists are behind bars because of the illegal surveillance that has occurred. And, of course, we have no way of establishing whether the president might actually be telling the truth on that.
Well, and the fact is that no one argues with the need for surveillance and making sure that the government does intercept phone calls and emails coming from known or suspected terrorists. It's a question for us as to how. What do you ensure to make sure you have a system of checks and balances in place that allows the government to do the surveillance they need to do, and at the same time doesn't allow for the type of abuse that we've seen in the past? And the Protect America Act really gutted what are some very important protections in the Fourth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment that protects us against unreasonable searches and seizures. And it basically gave the government the ability to intercept the international calls and emails coming to American citizens or American corporations without any judicial review. It's your basic fifth-grade civics lesson, that the reason why you have three co-equal branches of government is to make sure that one branch of government not get so much power in its hands that it becomes abusive.
Anthony Romero with us from the ACLU. If you have a comment, you can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Your call is subject to monitoring and not for quality control. It would be for keywords that our NSA handler would pick up and say, aha, we've got to follow up on that one. Now, Anthony, this is anecdotal, but is fascinating to me. In a recent issue of the New Yorker magazine,
right,
writer Lawrence Wright, a lengthy piece profiling Mike McConnell, do I have that right? It's not McConnell. It's the new head of the intelligence czar. So,
you've got it. Go ahead.
Is right. It is McConnell.
Yeah.
Okay, I get the Hayden and McConnell. I get mixed up sometimes. So this is McConnell, and he's talking to him. And McConnell gives us two insights. One is that he was in negotiations with the Democrats, including the Speaker, at the end of July last year.
Right.
And he made a deal with them that the White House would not approve. And sensing the vulnerability of the Democrats, their weakness as they're about to go on a summer vacation, the Republicans doubled down and rammed through a bill that was a far cry from anything that McConnell had agreed to.
That's exactly right.
Secondly, in the article, Larry Wright confronts McConnell and says, I have been subject to surveillance, and there is no indication that any warrant or FISA court process was used. And he was able, Wright was able to cite several instances, including a visit from the FBI, that clearly indicated that his calls were monitored. And McConnell said, well, of course, you got a call from somebody in Egypt. And Wright, in the article, responds saying, no, I placed the call to
right.
Egypt. Now, we have been led to believe that this surveillance only occurs when Osama bin Laden makes a call to somebody in the United States. But that's not true from the information that has leaked out and that the government is trying to paper over with the collusion of major Democratic leaders.
That's exactly right. And let's break that apart. Let's talk first about how, in fact, the powers are much broader than when the government knows or suspects that it's a phone call coming to or from a known terrorist or from Al-Qaeda. That clearly is not the case in the Protect America Act. And even when the president got his hand caught in the cookie jar over the illegal wiretapping of the NSA program, at least in that NSA program, the president said, well, we're only interested in hearing and intercepting the phone calls and emails of people who are conversing with known terrorists. I didn't believe the president, but at least that's what he said. But then the Protect America Act even went one step further than what the president did illegally without the approval of Congress or the federal courts. The Protect America Act allows the government now to intercept phone calls and emails that have a national security or foreign intelligence purposes, a much broader sweep than just known or purported or suspected terrorists. And here the concern is that the government is engaged in a wholesale fishing expedition that often invades the privacy of people who've done nothing wrong. And it affects the very vibrancy of our democracy, where journalists can't talk to their confidential sources without feeling like their phone calls or emails are being intercepted, where human rights groups can't document abuses in places like Pakistan or Afghanistan or elsewhere without fear of their researchers or their allies being intercepted in a government sweep that then can be shared with those foreign governments.
Mm-hmm.
And what's remarkable here is not just the power that the government has, it's also the fact that the Democrats capitulated in such a pathetic way.
Indeed.
Speaker Pelosi and Senator Reid, the leader in the Senate, very much had the power to prevent this vote for Protect America Act from going to the floor. That's the power of the party, the majority party. And yet they allowed the vote to go forward, and they put out these very lame press releases decrying the bill that they were very much a part of enacting in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should allow the Democrats to be able to play both sides of the fence on this one. And that's why we really do have to hold them accountable.
Well, and Jay Rockefeller is the lamest chair of the Intelligence Committee I've seen in a long time. He has accepted contributions from phone companies. I can't assert that there is a direct connection there. But to see him trying to protect them for their role in this intentional lawbreaking is reprehensible. And let me take this call because this listener wants to point something out that I was going to bring up, but we'll let Laura say it. Laura, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, and I'd just like to say that I'm a proud card-carrying member of the ACLU.
Well, thank you.
Let's not forget that this warrantless wiretapping began in early 2001, January or February, if I'm not mistaken. And we were not attacked by Al-Qaeda until September 11th, at least six, seven, 8 months after that. So what were they protecting us from before?
Well, Laura, you make a very important point. And Anthony Romero, this is something that the media continues to gloss over repeatedly in newspapers and on television. I hear the assertion that, the wiretapping did not start until after 9/11. And the CEO of Quest is the one who went public to explain that he was contacted in February of 2001.
Right, Mr. Nacho from Quest. And what I think it points out is obviously that this is an effort that the government's been endeavoring to do, and it's true of all executive branches, of all administrations, presidents that want to usurp greater power for the executive branch. I think what is true, though, is that after 9/11, this president took the opportunity of a national tragedy to push through even further some of those powers and to cower Congress into sniveling submission. And that's one of the most remarkable things here, is that here you have the president finally caught with authorizing an illegal surveillance program contrary to existing law without actions of Congress, without the consultation of the federal court. The New York Times sits on the story for more than a year after itself being cudgeled by the administration into not publishing the story, only forced to do so when one of its reporters is coming out with a book that will discuss the matter. And yet that they continue to use this fear-mongering, often to the detriment of what are core civil liberties, is truly astonishing. And that's a card that we ought not let the president play with the vigor he continues to play, which I'm sure he'll continue to play tonight.
Anthony, would you accept a modification to the language in the Leahy bill which would essentially immunize the phone companies from money damages or cap them at some level, but still require them to cooperate in any lawsuits related to this surveillance program?
No. I think Americans, and there's more than 40 lawsuits that have been brought by Americans who were deeply offended that their privacy was violated by their own telecommunications companies, with whom they're customers. In which those companies have violated their own privacy policies, have violated what is federal law, have violated what is often very strong state laws. I think those lawsuits need to go forward, and that Americans whose rights have been violated deserve a day in court. Now, if at the end of the day, that those lawsuits don't prevail, or that the judges can lower the damages because they fear that it's just the sums of money are too great, or if the onus and the burden on the telecommunications firms are such that, like the president often says, that it may bankrupt those firms, then we deal with that as a nation. We've dealt with bailouts before. We bailed out Chrysler Corporation. We've bailed out many of the airlines that find themselves into difficulty. But to stop and to limit the damages that Americans can assert from a very clear violation of their basic rights is not the way the legal system works.
Okay, I understand your point, and I'm not really quibbling with it. I'm looking for some kind of middle ground for these weak-kneed Democrats to preserve our rights and the rights of those who filed those lawsuits while coming to some terms with the Bush administration. And I think it could, in some ways, call their bluff if the immunity is not regarding the actual issues of wiretapping and email intercepts, but is related to the money side of it. That way you could say, well, look, the phone companies have nothing to lose by telling the truth.
But I think one of the things that the reason why the companies are afraid, and the reason why we might get other telecommunications firms that in the future will not comply with illegal requests for information, is if you put the fear of God in them that this will cost them money to the bottom line. And I think one of the things that the companies have been very much interested in is the idea and the offer of large federal contracts, of being involved and receiving military contracts for part of the surveillance and the anti-terrorism efforts. And I think part of what the Democratic leadership needs to understand is that we ought to let the legal system play out. That's what the courts are there for. They're complex, important bodies with good men and women who serve on the bench. Let the facts be presented. Let them adjudicate them. And let's look at it after this is all done. But an effort to stymie lawsuits in courts brought by American citizens, even before the baby is born, to try to muzzle it before the baby is born, is just not a proper way to have due process in America.
Okay, I hear you. Anthony Romero, one more question. I know you need to go. We have seen that the Patriot Act was passed in, quote-unquote, response to 9/11.
Right.
But it included a lot of clauses that don't relate to terrorism or any of those issues. And, in fact, some of those new laws included in the Patriot Act have been used to pursue drug dealers and money launderers and other people who...
Gambling.
Yeah, get involved in international crimes. Do we have to be concerned that the FISA law as it currently stands and as the amendments are proposed, that this wiretapping and other surveillance could be used for things, totally unrelated to Bush's so-called war on terror?
Sure. And in fact, I think the analog you draw is exactly right to the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, everyone thought, was a response to 9/11. And then if you look at the Justice Department's own report that has to report annually on how it uses the Patriot Act powers, it lists a litany of other cases that have nothing to do with terrorism, as you mentioned, drug crime, international crime, questions around gambling and casino owners have been targeted using the Patriot Act powers. Now, many of those activities, if not all of them, are probably illegal and should be illegal. The fact is that you shouldn't be able to use an anti-terrorism law to go after activities that have nothing to do with terrorism or national security.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we worry about carving out the judiciary entirely. That unless you have the judicial branch serving as an essential check and balance on the executive branch, that's going to be the type of abuse that you're going to see in all sorts of cases. And the Fourth Amendment is going to be nothing more than a bunch of empty words written on a piece of parchment by the Founding Fathers. That's the danger we confront.
Anthony Romero, I really appreciate the very strong work that ACLU has been doing and the strong critical comments that have emanated from your office. What else would you like to add about the next stage of this fight and what my listeners should be doing to preserve our constitutional rights?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of cleanup to do. I mean, beyond the surveillance issue, which is very much before us, there are questions obviously having to do with Guantanamo and the granting of habeas corpus rights to detainees. That's a case that's before the U.S. Supreme Court that will be decided in June. You can be assured that the Bush administration is not going to accept any decision coming out of the Supreme Court as something they're going to implement with any deliberate speed. You have questions that continue around the use of torture and the use of extraordinary rendition to render people to countries where we know they'll be tortured as a result of this.
Right.
And so there is no silver bullet. There is going to be no quick fix. No matter who occupies the White House in November, that in fact it's going to take us years to regain some of the things that we would have thought unthinkable to remove in the American democratic system.
Well,
and that's the work ahead of us.
I'm in it with you for the long haul. We do have a lot of work to do. The wrecking crew's been very busy. Anthony Romero from the American Civil Liberties Union on the web, ACLU.org. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very, very much.
Appreciate it. We'll take a break, and I will detail for you the action in the Senate today. A filibuster was averted, and the bill is, we'll explain that coming up. Also, I'll replay some comments from Tom Daschle, the former Senate Majority Leader, who we talked with in Washington last week. And your calls and comments are welcome, too. Call me right now, toll-free, at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. A problem in the Santa Cruz Mountains, northbound 17 before the summit. Looks like a large bag of garbage got dropped in the right lane. Again, that's north 17 before the summit. Do have word of a crash on Carmel Valley Road, east of Chautauqua Road. Looks like a truck overturned, landed on its roof. Fortunately, it's off on the right shoulder. CHP is on the scene of this problem. Northbound Highway 1 after Buena Vista, stalled car. Looks like it got a flat tire. It's partially blocking the right lane. Do be advised the M line off-ramp from northbound 1 remains closed. That will last into this summer. Also, northbound 9 between Middle Road and Western Avenue. Road construction has the left lane blocked. This report is brought to you by H&R Block. H&R Block has more than 110,000 tax professionals and over 12,000 offices. Put any one of them to work for you. Call 1-800-HR-BLOCK or visit YouGotPeople.com today. That's traffic on KRXA.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Do you have difficulty sleeping? Are aches and pains keeping you up at night? The Amethyst Biomat is a heated healing mat that you lie on to relax, energize, detoxify, alkalize, eliminate pain, depression, insomnia, and improve your body, your mind, and your spirit. It is simple, safe, and effective to use in your bed or massage table. Comes in 5 sizes and is used by individuals and alternative holistic practitioners worldwide. Imagine doing nothing and achieving everything. Call Rachel at 1-888-337-7262 or visit amethystbiomat.com. That's AmethystBiomat.com. And start sleeping tonight. That's 1-888-337-7262 for Rachel. Or browse to amethystbiomat.com and get the good night's sleep you deserve.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're heading into the free speech zone. You can get on the line right now. We'll be taking calls all the way up until, the next hour and 10 minutes or so. 6 o'clock Pacific time. You know how that works. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm going to try to relay to you what happened in the Senate today. It gets a little convoluted because of the way the Senate rules work, but see if you can follow me. Senate Democrats defeated a Republican motion to end debate on a bill overhauling U.S. foreign intelligence surveillance law. Now, the bill that they declined to debate was the Rockefeller bill, which includes immunity for the phone companies. So by a vote of 48 to 45, 12 votes short of the need to end debate, the underlying bill is now put on hold. And so this is a setback for the White House and for the Democrats and Republicans who support the president's spying program. And it's a momentary victory, as we said, for Harry Reid, who says he is against immunity for the phone companies. But then he allowed this bill to go to the floor. And as Anthony Romero pointed out, that is a failure of him to use his prerogative and the power that they have as the majority leader in the Senate and Nancy Pelosi's respective power in the House. So you can expect tonight that the president will lay into the Senate for failing to protect America and for leaving us vulnerable. And know that this is a lie, because the only thing that this would prevent is a new wiretap being placed outside of compliance with the FISA law. That's all that could be prevented. Anything that's currently underway, no issue. And the House is planning tomorrow to vote on a 30-day extension of the Protect America Act so that they can continue to debate it. The House version is better than what the Senate has been debating, but it's not perfect in my view. Last week in Washington on Friday, we talked to former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle about this, and I was a little surprised at his comments. I want to get your reaction, so let's listen to him now.
Senator Tom Daschle with us. If I may, just on another issue, you're no longer in the Senate, and I understand that, but I'm very troubled that your colleagues appear ready to paper over the intentional lawbreaking of the Bush administration, lawbreaking of the FISA law. And as this is described as updating the FISA law, they are trading away important protections for American citizens, and they're offering what I call amnesty to telephone companies that collaborated with the Bush administration on this illegal surveillance. What's your position on that, and do you agree, for example, with Senator Rockefeller's bill?
I actually do, Peter. I've been in this position for a long time now. I think it's so critical that we go back to the real source of the problem. The real source of the problem is the FISA law as it's currently written. One of the requirements of the FISA law was that we get court intervention and a court warrant each and every time we find it a requirement for national security purposes to wiretap. Well, that law ought to be required. That ought to be in place. But to give this blanket immunity to the government to wiretap and to potentially violate the rights of citizens and their privacy today is where I think the problem lies. Once the government tells an entity that they have to comply, that they have to be part of some larger effort to defend this country, then I don't blame the company, I blame the government.
Well, I'm sorry, Senator. What that is, in fact, is a way of protecting the government and the phone companies from ever disclosing what they've done. We'll talk about that next in the Free Speech Zone here.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. An hour from now, President Bush goes before Congress to deliver his last State of the Union address. We go live to the White House and CBS News correspondent Mark Noller.
Knowing a Democratic Congress is in no mood for any big initiatives from a Republican president in his final year, President Bush won't try. He will propose a modest program to help low-income kids transfer from bad schools to better ones, but mostly he'll focus on what he regards as unfinished business, especially the economic stimulus plan worked out last week. Iraq will dominate the second half of the speech. He'll assert the surge of U.S. troops there has worked, and the U.S. must build on that success. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller, CBS News.
I'm Dan Raviv. While campaigning today to be the next president, at least two of the Democratic candidates gave their pre-buttle. John Edwards said Congress stopped listening to Mr. Bush a while back, but will stand up and cheer because Washington is out of touch. And Hillary Clinton told a crowd in Massachusetts that Mr. Bush will surely say the State of the Union is strong, but Clinton said citizens she's been meeting would disagree.
Clinton suffered a political blow today.
It's time again for a new generation of leadership. It is time now for Barack Obama.
Senator Ted Kennedy revived the memory of his brother John as he endorsed Obama for the Democratic presidential nomination. He and his niece Caroline will campaign for Obama in the Super Tuesday states. The next big test for the Republicans is tomorrow.
I'm Peter King in Sanford, Florida. Three Republicans are flying and driving their way through the Sunshine State. Mitt Romney attacking John McCain on climate change.
Americans should not be the only people in the world that pay the cost of global warming.
McCain answering Romney's charge that he doesn't know enough about economics.
I'm proud to have been part of the Reagan Revolution that began the longest period of prosperity in American history.
And Rudy Giuliani ignoring them both.
I'm the only candidate who has actually reduced taxes.
Peter King, CBS News, Sanford, Florida.
A follow-up on FEMA's toxic trailers, those travel trailers emitting formaldehyde fumes that still house thousands of families displaced by Hurricane Katrina. Chief Investigative Correspondent Arvin Katayan reports the Centers for Disease Control suppressed repeated warnings from one of its own top scientists about the long-term health risks.
CBS News has contacted the CDC and has yet to receive a response to our questions. We do know this. As of last Friday, the CDC has finished its testing for FEMA. The results are due next month, but there has been nothing said and nothing done to this date about potential long-term health risks for those people living in those trailers.
Those risks could include respiratory problems, cancer, and birth defects. The Dow, 176 points higher today, closing at 12,383. This is CBS News.
What if I told you buying a good used car just got a whole lot easier? And what if you could know the history, mileage, and price of that used car long before you even go to the dealership? Well, here's the answer. Simply go online and search Yahoo for Honda Certified Used Cars. You'll see the current selection at the Honda dealers nearest you, along with the information you need to make an informed decision. Feels good to be in control, doesn't it? Okay, no more questions. Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
They say a man should always dress for the job he wants. So why am I dressed up like a pirate in this restaurant? It's all because some hacker stole my identity. Now I'm in here every evening serving chowder and iced tea. Should have gone to FreeCreditReport.com. I could have seen this coming at me like an atom bomb. They monitor your credit and send you email alerts, so you don't end up selling fish to tourists in t-shirts.
Offer applies with enrollment and Triple Advantage.
Technology makes the world more impersonal, but sometimes that's a good thing. CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett reports on trends in takeout.
May I help you?
Not so much face-to-face interaction now.
Oh, I'll have what she's having.
Restaurant experts say this year up to 18% of customers may order online and get meals to go. If text message ordering becomes more mainstream, more than half the orders could be placed that way. Customers like using the web. Often they say it's more accurate than phoning a restaurant. And at Baltimore Washington International Airport, the Silver Diner takes online orders.
What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak, fish.
Yes, I remember I had lasagna.
Eventually, there may be kiosks around the terminal and in the pilot's lounge. Just tap the keyboard and you'd get your meal at the gate. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
You can also go online and buy Super Bowl tickets, but be prepared to pay. One Patriots fan in Massachusetts says he's shelling out $29,000 for tickets, airfare, and accommodations to take his two sons to the game. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E.
The omega-3 fatty acids, zinc, flaxseed oil, digestive enzymes. As soon as Donovan was put into his daily food, you could tell he felt better. Okay, did you get that?
You won't believe how happy dog was.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
I'm a midnight milk drinker. I have to be when my heartburn hits. When it does, I just grab a carton and chug it.
Heartburn isn't funny. That's why Zantac is serious. Just one pill relieves your toughest heartburn all day or all night. So the suffering stops and life starts. Heartburn? Attack it. Zantac. Use as directed.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We're launching into the free speed zone this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call in right now, grab a line. We'll go to the phones here shortly. It's 888-5-PETER-B. I want to ask you, who are you going to vote for in the presidential primary in California next week? Kucinich has pulled out. Does that change your decision? And also, what do you think about Barack Obama's plan to emphasize his support for driver's licenses for undocumented residents? Illegal aliens would be what the Republicans call them. I think it's a great idea. Want to talk about it? I'd like to hear from you. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And before we take your calls today, I want to share a brief interview that we recorded in Washington last week at the Families USA Conference with a man who really impressed me. He is a professor of psychology at Emory University. Let's take a listen.
Dr. Drew Weston has joined us. He's an author. One book that he's written is called The Political Brain. He teaches at Emory University in Atlanta and formerly was at the University of Michigan, Harvard Medical School, and Boston University. Dr. Drew Weston, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
We had a great conversation before we turned on the microphones here, and I think our listeners are going to learn a few things from you. You made the point that presidential elections revolve much more around values than issues, and that Democrats often have a 14-point plan about global warming or about insuring every American, and that this gets lost on the average voter. But the more emotional appeals, the visceral appeals that come particularly from Republicans, really connect with their base. Now, do the same techniques work with liberals and progressives? Are we more drawn to values and perceptions than we are voting a candidate who agrees with me on 16 issues?
The short answer is yes. If you look back at the data from the last 30 to 40 years of electoral history, particularly presidential politics, although the same applies at the Senate and congressional levels, what you find is that in order, the best predictors of people's voting behavior, the first best predictor is their feelings towards the parties and their principles. The second is their gut-level feeling towards the candidates. Third is their feelings towards the candidates' personal attributes like leadership and empathy, compassion, integrity, occasionally competence. I think more for people on the left than for the right. That's a criterion.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you get fourth down the list, you get their feelings about the policies. Go all the way down to fifth on the list, you get to their beliefs about specific policies. And that doesn't even predict voting behavior at all if you first account mm-hmm. for those top four. So, you know, what it means is that what Republicans do is actually the way you win elections. You start at the top of the hierarchy with making clear everyone knows what you stand for. And you don't hide your values in the fine print of your 14-point plans. You make them front and center, and your 14-point plans are illustrations of your values rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. What about likability? That has surfaced as an issue in the Democratic primaries.
Well, Democrats aren't very good judges of electability, because electability is closely related to likability. And, you know, we've had many candidates who are likable, like Walter Mondale, but not charismatic, who don't inspire people, who don't make them feel anything terribly strong. I mean, Michael Dukakis was a great example of someone who really made the kind of appeal to, you know, I'm gonna be a really effective leader. I'm gonna give you supreme competence,
mm-hmm.
But I'm not gonna make you feel anything.
Yeah.
And we saw what happened in that election. You know,
I think his real mistake was he used Neil Diamond for theme music for the campaign.
Yeah, probably that, and imagining that that voters were more like Mr. Spock than like Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
I think is probably the other biggest mistake he made.
We're talking with Drew Weston here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, Drew, with these factors in mind, how do you see the three leading Democratic candidates? John Edwards comes across as total wonk, the guy with an 18-point plan to somebody else's 14-point plan. And Obama, I think, represents a guy who is aware of the comments that you just made and is focused not so much on specific issues. When I've heard him speak, I describe his speeches as free of political calories. He doesn't, you know, cite a bill number and tell you how he amended it four times and why that made it better. He talks about overarching issues and gives voters a way to project their own views onto him and say, oh, yeah, he's my guy.
Well, people do like to vote for a Rorschach, but they like a little more than that. I mean, if you look at who's been most successful in the last 30 to 40 years in electoral politics, you think of Ronald Reagan, you think of Bill Clinton. Those are our two, you know, the two presidents who left office most popular and who were elected twice and in elections that were pretty big landslides, as opposed to George W. Bush, who squeaked by that last election in large measure because the Democrats threw it. But if you look at what they did, Ronald Reagan was crystal clear about what his values were. He actually didn't give us a lot of policies in advance. What he told us was, you know,
government's the problem.
You got it. Government's the problem. It's not the solution. It's time to give people their money back from their hard-earned paychecks. Bill Clinton talked a lot about values of fairness and of opportunity, but he illustrated that, and he talked about being a different kind of Democrat, that he was not the typical kind of Democrat that particularly white males had said, you know, I'm not interested in you anymore. And he used the example of ending welfare as we know it and saying, you know what, I hear what you're saying about not wanting a piece of your paycheck going to people who aren't working. We're not going to do the non-compassionate thing that the conservatives want to do, which is just to say, I'll kick you and your children off. We're going to give you ways to make it easier to go to work and more profitable to go to work than it is to stay home. And what Obama has done, I think, is he has done the inspirational kind of piece that he has inspired people the way Reagan did and the way Bill Clinton did. And it's, I think what he has not done is to give us that kind of signature issue yet about what's an example of how my values and my focus on inspiration, what am I going to, what's an example of how that's going to play itself out in an Obama presidency?
Mm-hmm. Now, turning to the Republicans for a moment, some of it strikes me as comical, but probably not to the Republican base. When I heard Mitt Romney say blithely that he wanted to double Gitmo, to me, it was an expression of ignorance. It was a statement that he doesn't care, that the world sees America as a country that condones and utilizes torture. And, you know, it just is a total turnoff to me. But I have to imagine that there are a lot of gosh, I think of them as dumbasses. I can say that. but people who will take that and say, oh, yeah, he's my guy. He wants to double Gitmo. He's tough on Osama and Al-Qaeda. And he'll, you know, I mean, it's all bluster.
Well, you know, you have seen the Republican in the Republican debates, kind of the battle over who can out Gitmo each other. You know, it's like a poker match. You know, someone's saying, well, I've got three Gitmos, and someone says, I'll raise you four Abu Ghraibs. I mean, you know, that's how the Republicans tend to talk. And when Democrats try to answer those things weakly, they get killed. I mean that's why our Constitution's being subverted, is because the Democrats have come back by talking about things like habeas corpus. Well, to me, when I talk to Democratic and progressive leaders and candidates and organizations, what I tell them is, don't take words like habeas corpus out in public. That doesn't do you any good. Nobody knows what it means. It makes them feel stupid, frankly. Mm-hmm. But they all know what it means to the idea that if your son and daughter now were to go overseas, say, on a break from college over the summer, any country in the world now can pick them up if their leader says, you know what, I think this person might be a danger to my state. They can pick them up. They can snatch them up, never tell you they've taken them. They can torture them. They can lock them up in a small cell. And you know the reason why they can do that is because the United States of America has exported that, as that is now international law. And, boy, that gets through to parents when they think about it a lot better than talk about habeas corpus.
Yeah. Now, on the other side, the Democrats got all hung up on the way the network, CNN in particular, tried to make immigration the most important issue. And they started with the driver's licenses in New York, and then they tried to keep the argument alive. And to me, the guy who really nailed the proper answer to the question was Bill Richardson, who said, yes, I believe, and I've done it in New Mexico, we do give driver's licenses to undocumented residents. And the rest of them were, even Obama, were dancing around and had to be pressed on what their real position was. And we heard Chris Dodd move to the right and say that, you know, driving isn't a right, it's a privilege. And I just feel that most of them missed the point, and Richardson really got it right.
Well, the problem is, for progressives like us, Richardson got it right. For a lot of the nation, you have to say something before you say that. And the thing that you have to say before is something that tells people that you understand what their concerns are about this issue, aside from just the prejudice. And there's a lot of this that's fueled, of course, just by prejudice. But there's another piece that's fueled by the sense of law and order, and that people ought to obey our laws, and you know, people ought to come here legally. So if you start out by saying something as simple as, look, the first and most important job of government is to protect your people, and you can't protect your people unless you protect your borders. I mean, as a progressive, I believe that just as much as the next person. If you say that first, and you then say, and look at it, it's 6 years after 9/11, you can get anybody across any of our borders, and you can get anything into our ports, and we haven't protected those borders. That's unbelievable 6 years after 9/11. If you start there, you can now speak as progressively as you want about immigration.
Very
because now you can say, yeah, and you want to know the reason why I'm issuing driver's licenses to illegal immigrants in this country? It's because the federal government, under the leadership of George W. Bush and the conservatives, has not been able to deal with this problem of immigration because they're too busy demagoguing it. They'd rather stir up hatred than they would fix it.
So I want to get your reaction to these comments. That is Dr. Drew Weston. He's a psychology professor at Emory University. And I realize that what he said isn't comfortable for some people. He's talking about persuasion. He's talking about how to present issues in a way that attracts support from people who might not be naturally inclined to extend that support. And so I hear what he's saying about driver's licenses and immigration issues, and I do understand the contentiousness and emotional nature of the debate. But as you heard me say, fundamentally, I think that it's a safety issue and that we should give driver's licenses to anybody who is driving and that they have to abide by the law, they have to carry insurance, etc. But to claim that we are for law and order and say that we won't give driver's licenses to those who are not here legally, well, it's just trading one sort of chaos for another. And since we're not realistic about fixing our immigration problems, well, I'd like to start with the driver's licenses. And that's why I support what is a risky move by Barack Obama. He's playing for Latino votes in California. That's very clear. But it could come back to bite him in the general election. So I want to hear your thoughts about this and other issues. Lines are open right now, 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. We'll go straight to your calls after a quick break here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2008 Audi TT Coupe, a zippy little sports car that's a lot of fun if you can afford it. The TT's sleek design and 3.2-liter six-cylinder engine with direct injection produce an amazing land rocket. The six-speed automatic has a dual-clutch gearbox, and even though I'm not sure how it works, it's one of the smoothest in recent memory. Handling, traction, and the Quattro all-wheel drive, all excellent. Inside, it's roomier than most of its competitors and has all the gadgets you'd expect. Before you buy a roadster, including Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, or Mazda, be sure to take a spin in an Audi TT. By the numbers, the Audi TT gets 18 mpg in the city, 24 on the highway, and sells in California for about $48,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Checking traffic on KRXA. There is a crash on Carmel Valley Road east of Chichagua Road. A truck overturned, landed on its roof on the right shoulder. The tow truck that was supposed to pull it off the right shoulder has now gotten stuck in the mud, so another tow truck has been called. It is en route to the scene. Meanwhile, expect some delays. Also, Santa Cruz County, northbound 1 after Buena Vista Drive, a vehicle sustained a flat tire. They tried to pull over to the right shoulder, but unfortunately that shoulder was not quite wide enough, and they are partially blocking the right lane. Northbound 1, the Emmaline off-ramp still shut down. That will last until the summer of 2008. Highway 17 is flowing well in both directions. This traffic report is brought to you by KO Pectate. Don't let diarrhea stop you. KO Pectate stops diarrhea fast and has two key electrolytes, potassium and sodium, to help you recover fast. Stop diarrhea fast with KO Pectate. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Speak of the devil.
The devil of the moment that we're going to speak of is a guy named Mitt Romney. He wants to be your next president, and he looks like he's still a contender. He's doing pretty well in Florida, kind of neck and neck with McCain. And Martha in Sacramento joins us. Welcome. Thanks for calling, Martha.
Well, thank you, and I really have been enjoying your show, Mr. Collins.
Well, thanks. You can call me
Peter.
Well,
I say enjoy show, but I used to watch TV a lot, but now the radio is my favorite because it's so much more informative.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You just don't get this kind of information now, on TV.
Now, before we get to your comment, I want to play this clip again for people who may not have heard it an hour or so ago when we played it. And this is a recording from the MSNBC Florida debate, and Tim Russert is about to ask Mitt Romney a question. And in between the question and Mitt Romney's answer, a voice comes out of nowhere suggesting an answer to Mitt Romney, which he then parrots. Let's listen.
Governor Romney, you are a big fan of Ronald Reagan. Will you do for Social Security what Ronald Reagan did in 1983?
I'm not going to raise taxes. What I'm going to do...
Well, Ronald Reagan...
Raise taxes. Raise taxes.
So do you hear the whispered voice there? Raise taxes.
Yes.
We only hear those two words. Presumably Mitt could hear more of that. But, you know, it reminds me of a guy I saw when I was in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago who's hearing impaired and who was carrying a hearing aid that amplified my voice so loud that I could hear it coming out of the earpieces of his assistance device. And it does appear that Mitt Romney's earpiece, or whatever it was he was listening to, was turned up just a little too loud.
Well, this happened several years ago also, not with him, but it was, remember when they were having the conferences across the United States, I Am Woman?
Yeah.
Okay. They're in Oregon, just out of Spokane at the college there. They had I Am Woman conference. And the women, the Mormon women, all had earpieces to be told by the men that were outside what to say and do and how to vote.
Really?
Yes.
Now,
I was in Utah at the time when I Am Woman was a conference in St. George. And the bishops there in Cedar City told the teachers and the women, if you go to that conference, you won't have a job when you come home. There were several that went, but they didn't have the job when they got back. And they are told what to say, what to do, and what not to do.
Now, Martha, where do you get these devices? You go to Radio Shack and say...
Oh, well, there is an ad.
I need a wireless debate cheating kit?
You can buy them. I have seen the ads in paper magazines on helping someone that is hard of hearing so that you can turn it down, and that way it won't disturb your bed partner or something like that if you're listening to. But it says it is so good that it can hear someone across the street talking, their conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out there. You can buy them. I don't know just where.
Yeah.
And but I do know this happened, and I didn't go to the conference there in Oregon, but I talked to some of the Catholic sisters, and they said every time they got up to speak, the mic wouldn't work, something would happen, and so they know how to legally control things. And it really scares me to think they have finally come out with someone to run for president.
And it's interesting because initially the MSNBC website, the blogs there, included some speculation about this, and then it appears that material was taken down. And, hey, you know, there's an open question here exactly how this happened, who did the whispering, and why Romney was able to pick up on it so quickly and answer the question in a way that, you know, probably represented his political interests. So I think we need to know more about this, because if we have candidates cheating in presidential debates, I think we deserve to know that.
I do, too.
I think that's a very important defining factor.
And it's good to know across this country that they do these things all legal. We were living in Utah, and because my husband was a pastor, we had a grown man sit out in front of our house every day watching our home.
Mm.
Now, these things are like, my kids said this is like the mafia or communism.
Martha, the clock's run. I got to stop there. Thank you for calling today. More calls coming up in the Free Speech Zone. It's 888-5 Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests, and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course, it's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We're in the free speech zone here, taking your calls. I've got a couple of lines available. Why don't you join in? I want to hear your thoughts about Barack Obama, about Hillary Clinton, and about Obama's new statements about driver's licenses for undocumented residents of the United States. Got lines for you now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And a shout-out to our new listeners on Green 960 in San Francisco who hear our program late at night. I hope we're helping keep you up all night. Fear up, Bush on television tonight. You might want to take evasive action. 6 o'clock Pacific time is when he will deliver his final State of the Union message. I'll be watching later, just because it's my job. But also, I think I'm going to get wistful and nostalgic for the lies and misdirections of the past and the fact that he can't help himself. You just know that tonight he's going to slime the Democrats over the surveillance programs. And he's going to demand, this is going to be the interesting part, he is going to demand fiscal responsibility by ending earmarks. And earmarks are ugly. Earmarks are the way legislators get money for pet projects in their districts, the pork that they bring home from Washington. And some of it is wasteful spending. I will acknowledge that. But who the hell is George W. Bush to talk to anybody about wasting our money? He's thrown good money after bad in Iraq, hand over fist, blank checks. I mean, the latest is $70 billion. And there's no real accounting for it, and they don't even tell us when they expect that money to run out. They'll just be back with a handout and a demand saying, give me more money or else. So that's my take on what you can expect from the State of the Union message tonight. Harold in Sacramento, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Oh, I hate it when you say that.
Thanks. I know, that's why I said it.
Oh, good. Thanks for holding for all day or whatever it was.
My comment has to do with the fact that I don't think that Obama, Edwards, or Hillary are going to change anything. And the reason is because of the growth of governmental power.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back and look, for example, in the 1850s, someone in Wyoming or the Midwest could be born, work, have children, get married, and die, and the government would never even know that they existed. And then Social Security numbers, now a person has to have their first year of birth, just as an example. But the point being is, how did we get from there to where we are now without keeping these changes that are made in place? It's mm-hmm. the way the state power grows. And so if Hillary, Obama, or Edwards gets in, everything is going to stay the same. The only thing they're going to change is the outward clothing of the apparatus that Bush has created. It's impossible to roll back what he's done.
Well, Harold, I disagree, but I don't disagree entirely. I agree with you to the extent that it will be very difficult to roll back the loss of our liberties, the enhancement of presidential powers that have occurred under this administration. And I also agree with you that Obama, Edwards, Clinton, they probably would not initiate drastic rollbacks in the power grabs or in the incursions on our civil liberties. But I think that there are stark differences. I do think that any one of those candidates will not appoint judges to the Supreme Court for life who would support torture, who would support invasions of our civil liberties and violations of the Fourth Amendment. And so starting with the court, I believe that any Democrat who gets elected will have some impact over the next 4 to 15 years in, you know, trying to correct the extremes of the Bush administration. But in my lifetime, I have never seen an eradication of power grabs. There's simply this kind of ebb and flow where we get it under control for a while, you know, like we did after Nixon, and then, you know, Reagan grabbed more power, and Clinton didn't really do it to the extent that Bush has. But it is a kind of cycle that we see in American government, and we've also seen that during wartime, the courts and the Congress give incredible deference to the president, and I think that's a serious mistake. We need to operate our country at all times with vigilance for constitutional values, and we must maintain them at all times and at all costs, because otherwise the kind of battles that we claim we are spearheading, you know, this drive for freedom and liberty and democracy in the Middle East, it's just so much of a crock, but it will come back to bite us if we don't make the course corrections and demonstrate to the world that not every American is in sync with George W. Bush.
Yes, sir. May I throw just another quick one?
Sure, go ahead.
Why can't we get the people who want to, you know, the FISA bills?
Mm-hmm.
Why in the heck aren't they like accessories after the fact to what's going on? I mean, they're trying to condone it and help it.
Well, Harold, you raise a good point, and this is the whole reason why when I was talking with Anthony Romero from the ACLU, it is important not to grant immunity to the phone companies or to government officials. We need to allow these lawsuits to proceed so that ultimately we will find out, hopefully, the extent to which American citizens have been spied upon and their rights violated, and from there we can try to correct it. But what you have is a stonewall erected by the Bush administration, which they call the state secret privilege.
Yes.
It's not based in law. It's based on a series of court precedents.
Reynolds.
Again, courts, you know, getting on their knees for a president during wartime. And we need to reverse that. And we need a court that will, you know, rule boldly in favor of the underlying constitutional values. And so, you know, it's going to be difficult, but we've got to fight to get our rights back. And it's not just like the Beastie Boys, you know, fighting for the right to party.
Yeah.
We got to fight for the right to our privacy, our liberties, and our constitutional rights.
Yes, sir, and to carry on the great conversation.
Thank you very much, Harold.
Thank you, sir.
Great to talk to you now. To Joan in Sacramento on 1240 Talk City. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to make a comment regarding your recent guest, regarding a quote that he met, what he said. He said that the Democrats, George Bush was able to squeak through their eck of victory due to the Democrats' mistakes.
Right.
I mean, the election was stolen.
Well, I do agree with you, Joan. The reason I didn't challenge him on that is my time was limited. And my point was to let him express himself. And one thing you do have to say, the reason the Republicans were able to steal the election in Ohio was that it was so close nationwide. And if, you know, we'd had a wider margin, if Kerry and Edwards had won more states, even if they'd had a larger popular vote, you know, there would have been greater evidence of the election fraud that occurred. And so, you know, I have to take my shots wisely when I'm talking with people. I didn't want to go into a whole digression about Ohio, but I agree with you that the election was gamed, manipulated, and outright stolen. And I also think he makes an important point that the Democrats didn't have a margin to overcome the graft in the electoral process.
How does he know when the votes are flipped on computers? How would he know that they didn't have the margin when there was systematic suppression of minority votes as well as stealing, you know, quote, glitches on computers. I mean, I was there at Uncounted. I was there in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I did election fraud research. There's overwhelming evidence. And for him to say it shouldn't have been that close, they don't know how close it was because the votes weren't counted correctly.
Well, you make a good point, but what I'm saying, by the way, this is my argument, not his, about the fact that it was too close. You know, look around the country. It was too close in New Mexico. It was too close in Missouri. And so we have to understand, and we also don't have Democratic leaders who honestly criticize the electoral process and share the views that you and I have of how unreliable and untrustworthy it is.
Our Democratic leaders are absolutely failures. They're disgraces. And only in that way do I agree that the Democrats blew it, because Kerry won, but not to object, not to be prepared, or totally even ignoring the problem since it was stolen in Florida in 2000, and not to do anything in that ensuing 4 years and just, hope that it would be stolen again in 2004?
Right.
My God, I was on January 5th in Washington, D.C. A bunch of us were lobbying for senators to do what Barbara Boxer did, that
mm-hmm.
is, i.e., support the election contest
right.
In Ohio.
Sure.
And we were actually kicked out of Ted Kennedy's office because this little jackass, tall, young jackass assistant of his, probably from an Ivy League college, was just sneering at us saying, oh, there might have been a few problems in the election, but not enough to throw the votes. And I just said, oh, really? Upon what do you base this statement? What facts are you relying upon? I was just in Ohio. And, of course, he was just sneered, and he couldn't give us any response, and actually told us to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a group of professionals. I'm a retired attorney. There was a medical doctor, physicist, incredible people there. And this little idiot, arrogant idiot, is saying that there's no problem. We were just furious.
Yeah,
and then, the Democrats have done very little since. But
well,
at least it's becoming a little more well-known.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just had to call and thank you. But I just hate to ever let any statement over mm-hmm. the radio going out to a mass audience getting away without a challenge when some... Who was that, by the way? I stepped out of the room and didn't know who you were interviewing.
His name is Drew Weston. He is a psychology professor at Emory University in Atlanta.
Well, I wish he'd wise up and watch what he says.
All right, Joan. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to
Bye-bye.
Have you listening. I'm glad you called. Now to Justin in Crescent City. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Justin.
I'm not sure if I've got a good connection or not. Your screener was saying it's pretty bad.
Oh, I can hear you okay. It's a little noisy in the background, but you're coming through all right.
Okay. Earlier, Martha called, and I was just wanted to clarify. Was she saying the Mormon Church controls Mitt Romney's debate?
No. She was talking. She was talking about a separate issue that she attended these meetings for women, and that she believed that they were using these kind of hearing aids or other devices to prompt people on the right answers. And in her case, she was saying that men were, basically telling women how they should express themselves and what their thoughts should be using some sort of a wireless system.
I just got the impression that there was some anonymous they, or more so ominous they, controlling both these women in this meeting and Mitt Romney too. I guess I was mistaken. I also wanted to ask you, is it true that Hillary Clinton accepted campaign money from the healthcare industry?
She has. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and is she still a proponent of universal healthcare?
She describes it as universal coverage. She's not a single-payer advocate.
Oh, okay.
She wants to keep pharma and the insurance companies in the game.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yep.
That's all. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate the call, Justin. We're going to take a break and return. Your calls are welcome here. There's room for you on the switchboard right now. The free speech zone is still available to you at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
checking traffic on KRXA. We do have a crash on Carmel Valley Road east of Chautauqua Road. A truck overturned, landed on its roof off on the right shoulder. The tow truck that was supposed to carry it away ended up getting stuck in the mud. So now another tow truck has been called. They're still en route to the scene. Meanwhile, expect some delays. Also in Salinas, Highway 68 eastbound after Hunter Lane, word of a stalled big rig blocking a lane of traffic. Northbound 1, the Emma Line off-ramp remains closed until the summer of 2008. That's part of that long-term construction problem. Also some delays northbound Highway 9 through Ben Lomond between Middle Road and Western Avenue. Caltrans has the left lane shut down for roadway rehabilitation. This will last until February 29th. This traffic report is brought to you by Kaopectate. Don't let diarrhea stop you. Stop diarrhea fast with Kaopectate. Unlike pills, Kaopectate speeds to the source, shutting down diarrhea and its uncomfortable symptoms. Always ask for Kaopectate. That's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's a pizza paradise where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Here's the boss. From Sacramento, the state Senate did not pass the AB1X, which is the governor's health care reform proposal, and it's a mixed bag. In many ways, I'd like to see it go forward because it's better than nothing, and in other ways, it's a very complicated scheme that includes a hike in the tobacco tax, and wasn't clear if all of the funding really is there, particularly in a huge deficit year in Sacramento already. So that battle will probably continue, but for now, Arnold Care is not going forward. Jake in Eureka, thanks for calling the PBC show. How are you today?
Hey, pretty good. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Hey, I'll let you talk about the results of the South Carolina Democratic primary.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think it was definitely good news for the Democratic Party. You know, 4 years ago when John Edwards won the South Carolina primary, 250,000 Democrats showed up to vote, and a lot of the experts were expecting that you know, maybe 350,000 would show up this year. It was 500,000.
Yeah.
And they turned out in force for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the whole point of why Obama needs to be the Democratic candidate in the general election. Because of the energy and enthusiasm he engenders in the public, especially younger people, and independents also. Whereas Hillary Clinton, you know, frankly, she repels independents and turns off a lot of people, except for the Republican base. That's the one group of voters Hillary Clinton inspires.
Well, it's very interesting because a lot of people have been speculating about why the Clintons and their surrogates, including Bill, started to rough Obama up. And something that I haven't heard anybody else say, this is my view, it is to try to drive up his negatives. Hillary has the highest negatives of anybody running for president, almost the highest negatives of any political figure in the United States. And so she can't really change that. Positions are hardened about her. There are very few people who don't have an opinion about Hillary Clinton. And so the only hope she has is to drive up his negatives, to get more people to reject Barack Obama. That is the calculus behind the billary tactics of the last 2 weeks.
Right. And just a week ago, all these pundits in the Beltway who supposedly know what they were talking about were making the case that Bill Clinton's tactics were going to help Hillary and hurt Obama. In fact, Bill Clinton's tactics backfired. Why? You know, you look at Clinton, the way he acted. It's, you know, the way he used to act during the 90s when he was going up against Republicans like Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole. But now Bill Clinton's going up against somebody, Barack Obama, who probably will be the next president of the United States and probably be even more popular than Bill Clinton was as president.
Well, Jake, a couple of points, and I want to credit. I'm lifting these from a column in the Washington Post on Saturday as we were flying out of D.C. I picked it up. Colbert I. King. I've never heard of this guy before. But, for example, item, Bill Clinton's jab at Obama's lack of experience. To elect Obama would be to roll the dice, sniffed the former president. When Bill Clinton ran for president in 92, he was governor of a small state, had no foreign policy experience, and didn't know how to salute. He got his on-the-job experience in the White House. Item, Hillary's claim to 35 years of experience. Subtract her years as First Lady of Arkansas and in the White House, and her time working as a lawyer in the Rose Law Firm and other jobs. As Reason Magazine's Steve Chapman reported in November, Hillary Clinton has just under 8 years of experience in elective office, one more than John Edwards and four fewer than Obama. So this whole experience thing, you know, is a mirage, and too many people buy into it. And I've heard them repeat the talking point. Hillary, she's got the experience. She can hit the ground running from day one.
Yeah, and Bill Clinton talking about fairy tales. I mean, I think the biggest fairy tale of all is that Hillary Clinton's experience somehow qualifies her for the presidency. What experience? Voting to support Bush and Cheney's illegal occupation of Iraq? Hell, just a few months ago, Hillary Clinton supported Joseph Lieberman's Iran resolution in the Senate calling for an attack on Iran. And Hillary Clinton at that time knew that the Bush claim of Iran trying to produce nuclear weapons was a lie. But Hillary Clinton still voted in support of that. So her experience does not give me any reason to believe that she would make a good president.
Well, I think you're right, Jake, and that's why next Tuesday, as you know, I don't tell people how to vote, and it's not a formal endorsement, but I do tell people how I plan to vote, and I'll be voting for Barack Obama for president.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Peter.
Okay, good to hear from you, Jake. Now to Elk Grove, where Mark is on the line listening to KSAC. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Peter, I wondered if you know how many independents are allowed to vote in the primaries in general in the different states.
Oh, it varies state to state. For example, in California, the rules are different for Democrats and Republicans.
Right, I know in California you can't vote unless you're undeclared, or if you're a Democrat.
In California, only registered Republicans can vote in the Republican primary,
right.
But I am a declined estate voter, an independent, and I will be able to go in and ask for a Democratic ballot. So that is a sharp disadvantage to Republicans, and it hurts John McCain because he draws independents and some Democrats much more than any other Republican.
Well, I'm wondering if there's independents that are voting for someone in the Democratic side that they think would be least electable. I have a hard time believing that the red states in this country are going to vote for an African-American male who's Muslim, whose middle name is...
Wait. He is not Muslim. That is a flat-out lie. He is a Christian. And he has said so himself. And Mark,
okay.
Mark, I'm sorry, I don't know where you heard that, but that is a Rush Limbaugh right-wing talking point, and it is flatly untrue. And
okay, well,
yes, his middle name is Hussein. So frickin' what?
No, and I understand that. I'm just saying, and I'm 100% for the guy, believe me. I would love for him to be president. I think he's great.
Then why would you say he's a Muslim?
Well, because I think a lot of people feel that way. I think a lot of people have that misinformation. I think that the Republicans are going to really play up on that when it comes crunch time.
So they'll lie.
I feel like that
they'll
lie,
and we should get out of the way because they're going to lie.
Oh, no, absolutely not. What I'm looking for this year is someone that's electable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just asking the question, is Hillary Clinton electable? Is Obama electable?
Well, as Jake pointed out, Obama in both Iowa and in South Carolina has brought lots of new people out to the polls who didn't participate last time, maybe haven't voted in years. And that can be the game changer that makes him electable. I agree with you, in red states and in the South, it's going to be challenging. Thank you for your call, Mark. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Same time, same stations.
Till then.
We're talking again with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, I just gave you a nice little chocolate raspberry treat. Can I drink wine and eat chocolate at the same time? Is there a rule against that? Is there a law in France that says I can't?
No, to the contrary. My girlfriends and I sometimes get together and have a treat of chocolate with one absolutely scrumptious wine that we have, which is called Cartagène, which is, again, something that people make in the south of France pretty much for the family. It's a treat, and they pull it out when you go visit them. You know how farmers are and people are close to the land, and they pull out the thing that they've made and they've kept in their cellar, and the foie gras and the special sausage and all this, and they sit around and they share this little treat with them. It's like communion.
Find out more about organic wines at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. Order by phone toll free at 888-ECO-WINE. Mention Peter B. Collins and see what happens.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Mark Noller at the White House. In a matter of minutes, President Bush will be announced into the House of Representatives to deliver his last State of the Union address. It's viewed as the president's best chance to influence Congress during an election year to pick his successor. But he is said to be realistic that a Democratic Congress won't go along with any big new programs, so he'll deliberately keep it simple. You'll hear him say the economy is undergoing a period of uncertainty, and he'll call for quick action on the economic stimulus plan worked out last week. On Iraq, he'll declare that the surge of U.S. troops last year produced progress that few could have imagined. I'm Mark Noller at the White House.
Capitol Hill. The House chamber is filled. Cabinet members and diplomats in the front, members looking for televised handshakes, staking out the aisle seats. High school pages sitting on the floor in the back at this annual gathering of official Washington. Senators Clinton and Obama are back from the campaign trail for one night. One of the biggest challenges the president faces tonight is just getting members of Congress to pay attention to what he has to say. As a lame duck with awful poll ratings, he's no longer in a position to set the agenda. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
It might be chilly with Senators Clinton and Ted Kennedy in the same room. He endorsed Barack Obama today.
I know that he's ready to be president on day one.
That was a swipe at Clinton's oft-repeated claim that she's the most qualified to be president. Kennedy also made a thinly veiled reference to the recent nastiness between Clinton and Obama, saying Obama will close the book on the old politics of misrepresentation and distortion. The Republicans are battling for votes in tomorrow's Florida primary, and CBS News correspondent Byron Pitt says Rudy Giuliani may be battling for survival.
Florida is his last stand. Trouble is, for his campaign, it's also his first.
If you don't win in Florida, how do you go forward?
Look, we're going to win in Florida. You don't.
What if you don't?
Oh, well, my goodness, in a foreign election, you don't talk about what happens if. You talk about winning the election.
Tonight, Giuliani has changed his tone a bit, saying he will reevaluate on Wednesday.
John McCain and Mitt Romney are neck and neck in the polls. Romney, the former businessman, is positioning himself as the best man to handle the economy. McCain says he's the man to confront terrorism.
When you look at the